is the agenda for now? Can I get a mover and a seconder?
I move, Chairperson.
And Chair.
I was worried the Chairperson of Sunday, the microphone was on that he wants to second. It's fine. Yeah, seconded by Honorable Mbata. Then the agenda is as it is. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody in our midst. We have an apology from the minister, and then apology from Honorable Gancho. Apology from Honorable Phillips. Apology from Deputy Minister Sochi. And then apology from the Director General. And apology from Honorable Person who leave the meeting not for long.
Chair, I'm starting the meeting.
Yeah, I say yeah. Who will leave the meeting.
Okay.
For
all
you.
Right. Okay, thank you,
Chair. Okay, thank you. The agenda that we have adopted today, we are still dealing with the presentations on the third and fourth quarter performance expenditure reports of the two of our remaining entities. That is your South African National Park and the South African National Biodiversity Institute. And you'll all agree with me that although this is not the presentation of these two entities' annual report, I one does believe that we can get a fair assessment of these entities' entire performance, as we'll expect you, the two chairpersons, Sandy and Chairperson of SANPAT, to present to us clearly, or rather briefly in passing, your audit outcomes. As we could see that the Auditor General has already issued the audit results or opinion for your good sense. One will not expect us to delve into the details on these audit outcomes at this stage, but we still do that once the Honorable Minister Barbara Tsisi tables the annual reports of the department and the respective entities in Parliament. For the team from the department in our midst, we hope this time we are not going to miss the deadline of tabling the annual reports to Parliament. Colleagues, you will recall that we had an opportunity to engage with the Auditor General after the tabling of the annual report in Parliament to probe this matter. And then when I say that, we are also going to have that opportunity, but I'm just alerting colleagues to the fact that we will have an opportunity to fully interrogate these findings sometime later with the Auditor General, who often tell us certain palatable truth about the performance of this entire environmental portfolio and our own oversight responsibility in this regard. Expect your invitation not so long, the AG. For those of you who will be around members, they are proposing for a briefing meeting with the chairperson, and I would like to extend that invitation to your friends as well. She later will communicate to you in due course. But then, having said that, I think it would be critical, chairperson of SANPA, to commend you for your achievement on your annual performance target. But how can one do this with a clear conscience when one looks at the not-so-good picture of the South African rhino population in the wild? and then we go through your document, you find that estimates indicate that 14.7% reduction in white rhino population and 2.9% apparent decrease in black rhino population. Then when one analyzes this overall statistics, it shows decline in rhino numbers across the board when the two estimates are combined. One, therefore, is actually worried about the use of this terminology, acting CEO, such as, I quote, estimate and apparent, as they clearly indicate that yourself, the sun part, does not know the true state of affairs on the ground. It is painful for us to witness the slow liquidation of the South African rhinos in the wild. One could see from the records that the predecessors of this committee in the 4th and 5th Parliament has been asking. For your benefit, Chair, my predecessors and other comrades, their colleagues, they have been asking whether the decline in rhino mortality due to poaching was due to anti-poaching efforts or due to the fact that rhinos were overpoached to the extent that rhinos had become rarer to be located by poachers in the wild. I think Honorable Singh has been there in this committee. He can attest to that. But then, when we go back to the record, the answer was consistently, due to improved law enforcement. But now we are seeing things which we have all along dreaded, that is the decimation of South African rhinos in the wild. Then, as I move towards the end, I would like to acknowledge you, Chairperson of FANBI, the achievement of over 90% deliverance on your annual performance target. And I think we want to also appreciate you, CEO and the team, for being proactive in indicating to the committee that the Auditor General's findings on yourself. You are only next to this Mangani for Wetland Park Authority, and as a knowledge-based entity, we expect you to set the pace on the best practices. Having said that, Chairperson of FANBI, you can then introduce the presentation, and definitely I believe you are going to hand over to the CEO to do the presentation. Over to you, Chairperson FANBI.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Parliament Portfolio Committee, Honorable Mrs. Mutambi and Honorable Members, and to the Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister Christian Soju in their absentia, the Board Chairpersons of DFFE, in particular of SANParks, Director General of the Department, SANBI CEO, Management, Executives and other CEOs that may be present. I'm happy to report that SANBI's annual performance of 93% for 2021-2022 is a steady improvement on the previous year's 2020-21, and was 89%. Chairperson and Honorable Members, there are however some areas that presented challenges to SANBI in achieving its targets, and this will be presented in detail by the CEO and his team. I'd like to just highlight the following achievements and some of the areas that pertains to our constraints. The first one relates to the external audit outcome. SANBI received an unqualified audit opinion addressing the internal control deficiencies identified through the external audit process. To this effect, the annual internal audit plan has been reviewed to ensure that all people, the guests, are attended to, and the Audit and Risk Committee have approved the Audit Improvement Plan. This plan is monitored quarterly by the board through the Audit and Risk Committee. The second one, Chairperson and Honorable Member, is the irregular expenditure. The irregular expenditure of about $146 million, which was incurred over a multiple years since 2005 to 2020-2021 financial year, was significantly reduced, and we are now at 99% of that reduction. To this end, we have got $8 million, which was incurred in 2021-2022, was due to recurring contracts could not be terminated without interrupting the enabling operational areas of Sunbiz business processes. Management implemented, leading to National Treasury approving coordinations of business. The next one is the financial performance. Sunbiz financial performance improved from the previous financial year as lighter COVID regulations allowed more visits to the facilities during the financial year. Sunbiz looks forward to the 2023 cash and financial performance as the economy improves and the tourists become more comfortable to visit our beautiful facilities spanning across our country. The next one I need to report to Chairperson and Honorable Members is the financial position. Sunbiz's financial position is solvent, with total assets exceeding total liabilities and liquid, with current assets exceeding current liabilities. The next one is the forensic analysis. We have got the Genetic Services Unit, which is working towards international compliance for forensic analysis, and implemented the International Society of Wildlife Forensic Science Standards and Guidelines, which are based on the ISO 17025 in March 2022. This maturing area of workplaces and this wildlife research and scientific service among the best in the world, and furthermore contributes to the evidence-based decision-making. Important to Sunbiz, also Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the human capital development and transformation. These remain key strategic goals for Sunbiz. In support of these goals, the Board has approved Sunbiz Transformation Charter in November 2021. This charter articulates Sunbiz posture and intent on transformation, records Sunbiz's commitment to transformation, and outlines the transformation aspirations, as well as to provide the means to achieving the same. Sunbiz's role in decision support is also very critical. Sunbiz fulfills this primary mandate through generating and coordinating scientific evidence required to support policies and decisions relating to better management, conservation of South African biological diversity. The next one, which is important as a highlight, is the Garden Expansion Program. Beyond the establishment of Gwalegha National Botanical Garden in the Eastern Cape, Sunbiz pursued the establishment of new national botanical gardens in the Limpopo and North West provinces. Throughout the process, Sunbiz worked with the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, the Department of Agriculture, Land and Rural Development, provincial conservation authorities and agencies, and community leaders. We are excited to announce that following this engagement, Minister Barbara Christie formally launched the Toyando National Botanical Garden on the International Day for Biological Diversity on the 22nd of May 2022. In the Northwest Province, engagements are continuing with the provincial conservation authorities and the Northwest Parks Board towards the establishment of the National Botanical Garden in the province. The next highlight is adaptation and climate change. The work on adaptation continues to prioritize efforts to build resilience to climate change through Sunbiz Adaptation Fund projects. The lessons learned through these projects are informing Sunbiz's exciting work towards unlocking finance for nature-based solutions to climate change and the development of several green climate funds project proposals. Emerging proposals include ecosystems-based adaptation for the management of floods, fires, and the dry spells and the securing of strategic water sources. The next highlight relates to the Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. Sunbe, through the biosecurity and ecological infrastructure component of the Presidential Employment Stimulus, created 954 job opportunities, 488 of which were filled by women, with 495 being placed at the National Botanical and Zoological Gardens. This contributed to the improvement of South Africa's high youth unemployment and enhanced rural livelihoods. Honorable Chair and the members, I will now request the CEO, with your permission and the team, to take the portfolio committee through the details of the presentation and the highlights I've just made. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, the Minister, honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister in absentia, and also the DG represented here by Flora Mkotwa from the DFFE, the Chairperson of the Sunbe Board and also Sunpass Board, and colleagues from both entities. I will be presenting quarter three and quarter four, and we'll be moving from the different areas to other areas. As I'm talking to quarter three, I will also reflect a little bit on the fact that most of the areas that were not achieved in quarter three were achieved in quarter four. If we can go to the next slide. Our mandate, of course, is informed by the NEMBA, which is the National Environment Management Biodiversity Act. Therefore, our mission is framed along those lines to deliver on our mandate. There are four programs that I'll be reflecting on. The first one, dealing with matters of gardens, which are botanical gardens and also zoological gardens. The second one, dealing with the biodiversity science and policy advice. The third one, on human capital development and transformation, as the Chair spoke to. And the last one, administration, that also covers corporate and related matters, including finance, to that effect. Let's move on to the next slide. We continue to perform our functions, and the report that we're providing, even the annual report or the quarter four report and quarter three report, are framed within those areas that are reflected there, that we provide science that informs decision making and also actions on the ground. And that is done through our work on taxonomy, collections, the mapping, special issues that are used by a variety of sectors in public and also in sectors beyond public sectors. We also provide assessments as part of our mandate on the state of biodiversity in the country, state of biological invasions in the country, state of the impact of GMOs in biodiversity, and also trends in ecosystems and species. All of these have implications, not only ecologically, but also implications socially and economically. So hence the reference by the Chairperson to the work on strategic water sources, the work on climate resilience in that form. So policy advice is the core, and then we influence that space in one form or another in the sector, beyond BFF and anyone that interfaces with this. Let's move on to the next slide. In the third quarter, at that time, we were still confronted with the challenges of the COVID program. Yes.
Who's the owner of OYP 30 Light? OYP 30 Light? Selector, can you remove this person from your meeting, please?
Okay, Chair.
Sure. Sorry, CEO. I see the person is busy disrupting you.
Okay, proceed. Thank you. Must I continue, Honorable Chair?
Yes, proceed now.
Thank you very much. So we were in quarter three still challenged with the issues associated with COVID-19 and all those restrictions that were there. That had an implication or effect on our ability to generate income the way we had targeted for that period. One other issue that we had to deal with was the staff affected by COVID-19 and their members. So our wellness program came in handy at that time to provide the support that is required. And I think we're proud to inform the committee that we've done well in that regard. Of course, with online engagements, in some cases, because we deal with biological resources in one form or another, we need to be on site, field-based activities, face-to-face interactions on site could not be done in the manner that we wanted at that time. So in some form, operations had to be done in a different form that presented the challenge. The decrease in visitor numbers, which the chairperson also spoke to earlier on, we had to be very creative on what could be done and how we could generate income and still allow people to enjoy all these natural and biological spaces, open spaces, in a form that could be within the limits of what was prescribed at the time. Of course, we had to make some reprioritization in terms of the emphasis at that time, yet also, on the other hand, balancing that with the delivery that we needed to do. To provide as per our APP. Go to the next slide quickly. In total, we had achieved 89% by the end of third quarter on targets that were set for that quarter, with 8% of those being work in progress. Move on to the next slide. So Chair, with your guidance, I don't know whether we do it the same way we normally do in the committee to focus on the areas that were not achieved at the time, then I can indicate as to which areas are those and then and also indicate what we did about. If that is the case, Chair.
Yes, focus on the yellow and the red ones.
Okay, let's move on to slide 17. Slide 17, we've got work that we're doing. As Sunbe, I did indicate that we do taxonomy and classification. What is happening is that for us to understand the state of biodiversity in the country, our science work, part of our science work involves the collection of specimens from different plants across the country. We are sitting with close to 2.5 million or so specimens, and in that case, because they are collected and stored manually. For the last few years, we have commissioned a program of digitizing those, getting them into electronic format, yet not losing anything, but also going deeper with the systems that we have to be able to provide more information that could not be seen through a naked eye using the systems that we have. So for each of the financial years that we've been doing that, we continue. We targeted 56,000 of those records to be digitized. In this case, for quarter three, we had targeted 15,000 for those to be done, and we missed that target, and it was 14,140. That's why it was work in progress. But we have since caught up on that and managed to exceed the number, the annual target that we had set for that financial year, as it's reflected in quarter four. If you go to slide number 19, slide number 19 on biomaterials, what we do, we also do the same for tissues and any other materials that one can derive what we regard or what we refer to as DNA from those materials. We've got a target of 5 years to make sure that 80,000 of biological or biomaterials and tissues, whatever form of specimen that we can use, whether it's hair, skin part, whatever that can be, could be stored in what we call biobank. So that biobank, we are working very hard, 6,000 materials added into the bank per year, and working towards 30,000. So
listen, how are you, man?
A few, 1,986. At that time in quarter three, with a quarterly target of 2,000. But of course, the total was meant to be 6,000, which we managed to reach in quarter four. So that part was taken care of. Let's move on to slide number 21.
No, I can hold it. Are you fine?
Slide number 21 deals with risk analysis.
We work
in the space of what we call biosecurity. We look at alien invasives that are
introduced
in the country in many forms. Some of them will come in the form of plants, reptiles, insects, or whatever type of animal that to be invasive in the country.
I'm from
South Africa. So in that
working
form,
so
we worked very hard to
tomorrow's work, but I saw that it's not a lot
of
fourth quarter,
but in quarter three, we were sitting with 10.
Yeah, but I'm going to do it in just a minute. But I did extend an invitation to happen to join in.
Slide number 27. It was still work in progress. This area of human capital development deals with a number of areas, a number of spaces. Work integrated learning, it takes students that are about to finish their studies and we give them an opportunity to be exposed to experiential learning, and in that learning at the end then they will be able to qualify and get their qualifications, whether diplomas or BTEC or whatever that they're working on in that regard. And others will take them as interns and then they are deployed in different areas. But when it comes to that quarter, it was work in progress when it comes to postgraduate students. We deal with them in two different ways. There are others that will come doing their honors, masters, and doctoral studies. We assign them mentors who will take them through and make sure that they finish on time on any matter that relates to biodiversity in one form or another. And those that are doing postgraduate, we offer those bursaries. At the time, we were below the target that we had set for 18 postgraduate bursaries to be awarded, and we had awarded 10 at that time. And we worked hard also on this in terms of the overall total of the cumulative impact of all these areas at the end of quarter four, which I will reflect later on. Let's move on to slide number 25, which is the last part. This one is a little bit dicey in the sense that at the time, it was still work in progress, of course. As much as in the third quarter we had achieved 87% of the target that we had set for the third quarter. I'm referring to this because when it comes to the fourth quarter, honorable members may be surprised that it comes in as work in progress, irrespective of the fact that we achieved an unqualified audit. I think it's also in the form of how the annual target was framed. But when it comes to dealing with the audit findings and also dealing with the irregular expenditure, as the chair has said, we have worked very hard in that to achieve 99.9% or 99.9%. We came to 311,000 only from 146 million, which on its own was a significant progress in clearing that up from what was carried over from previous years, from 2005 or so, which is what the chair had referred to. One area that we were not proud of on slide number 35 was on the matter dealing with the overall spend on payroll, from payroll vis-a-vis the total payroll amount when it comes to staff development. It was a bit lower at that time. We have since that time lifted the restrictions that we had, and in this current financial year is quite different. But at the end of the financial year, the target that was set was achieved, as it can be seen in quarter platform. Those are the areas, Chairperson, that I had wanted to also reflect on before I move on to quarter four. If I may go to quarter four, that's where at the end the CFO will come on quarter four. If we go to quarter four report and go straight to slide number 18. Slide number 18 on quarter four. In total, in quarter four, we ended up achieving 93% with 7% work in progress. The other areas that I referred to in quarter three were attended to. There are three areas that could not be finalized in the manner that we wanted. The space that we had on risk analysis, which was 10 in quarter three at the time, at the end of the year, or the financial year, in quarter four, we had attended to 36 out of 45 of those developed, which represents 80%. So this is one area that we strengthened the capacity to make sure that in this current financial year, we are way ahead for each of the quarters, which will be seen when we account coming into the portfolio committee sooner. Let's move on to slide number 23. Slide number 23 deals with the area of human capital development. If this is viewed cumulatively, we find that the total of all of these interventions indicates 220 of those beneficiaries were in one form or another, from work integrated learning to bursaries to intents, and we ended up achieving 242, 10% over the overall total. But there are specific areas that were lower in terms of numbers, but we have since prioritized them for carryover in that regard. 53 of 75 that we had set to recruit and designate to specific workstations were done at the time when it comes to work integrated learning. The other one was the postgrads, 13 out of 22. Those are the two areas, but when it comes to learnerships and the areas of postgraduates that needed to be supported, we had exceeded the target. That's why I'm talking about the overall and the cumulative impact of that whole process. Let's go to slide number 27. Slide number 27 deals with audit and related matters. Of course, the chair indicated we received an unqualified audit opinion. So we couldn't put it green, not because it was not unqualified. It's that the issue was that it was targeted to be without any methods of compliance or filing or any matters associated with APP and other matters on financials. But we did receive an unqualified audit in that regard, and if we compare that against or look at it against the annual target, it comes in amber in that regard. All other matters that were raised in quarter four earlier on, as I spoke about, we had covered them sufficiently. I can be allowed to call upon the CFO to talk to the annual performance in terms of financial performance. That would be our last part of the presentation. Lorato.
Honorable members, the Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, CEOs, and the chairpersons of the board and all colleagues. We are presenting the 2021-2022 external audit outcome based on quarter four and quarter three being audited by the AG as part of as for the full financial year. As it has already been said, we received an unqualified audit opinion, and we did have some findings from the AG coming as a result of some errors that were in the identified in the financial statements, and they were found to be material, and we were given an opportunity by the auditors to correct them, and we did so, resulting in us being unqualified. They indicated findings on the smartness of the target, the two indicators that are indicated as part of Program 1, and because of these two findings where the errors in the financial statements and performance information were identified, they were also highlighted as internal control deficiencies. Both these deficiencies that are in the technical indicator descriptions and also the review processes of the financial statements are part of the improvement plan that has been submitted to the Audit and Risk Committee and approved accordingly, and we are attending to them. On the next slide, we are showing the financial performance, which is inclusive of quarter three. Overall, for the year, we were able to achieve an improvement in our revenue, moving by 27% from the previous financial year, mainly as a result of lighter COVID regulations and more visitors being able to utilize the gardens and the sunbeam, as well being able to offer more activities throughout the gardens. So overall, we still have government grants being the main contributor towards our revenue being at 72%. The other schemes we are working on to improve and recover from the COVID impact. On the next slide, the next one, there is an indication of the expenditure, slide number 36. That's the indication of the overall expenditure, where expenses only increased by 11% year on year. And we are reflecting the main contributor being our employee cost at 59%, as a result of the gardens being highly labor intensive. And at the same time, on the science side, we are reliant on human capital to deliver what we do. On the next slide, we are reflecting the overall accounting surplus of 32 million versus the 78 million deficit that was incurred in the previous financial year, and it's accounted for in terms of the GRAP standards, and is reflective of the performance from revenue versus our expenditure. On the next slide, we are showing the financial performance, where financial position, wherein we are reflecting our total assets having grown by 11% from the previous financial year, and our total net assets having improved by 5% overall. So in terms of the solvency, we are still solvent with the total assets exceeding total liabilities, and our current assets as well exceed our current liabilities sufficiently, and it means we are also improved. On the next slide, we have slide number 40, we have the cash flow, wherein we are reflecting the different flows of cash from various activities, and it's also reflective of the increase in the operational activities, where in the previous year we had an overall net cash decrease of 64 million, and this financial year we are reporting a net increase of 83 million, which is towards donor funded projects and infrastructure activities. On the next slide, we are reflecting our irregular expenditure, which it has already been reported that we did consequent management on all the irregular expenditure that was coming from previous financial years and the recurring amount of 8.6 million. And we were able to then obtain National Treasury condonations amounting to 154 million. And we are left with 311 to resolve in this financial year. Thank you, Chairperson.
I should believe that brings
Chairperson.
So, we are done
with the president. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay. Colleagues, can I see a show of hands of Member Go and to raise issues? With Sanbin? I need hands. Hands, colleagues. Yeah, Honorable Singh will be followed by Honorable Rice. That order.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation that was made. I just have a few questions. On the issue of the payroll being off target in the third quarter, which was a red flag, and transformation, I think the presenter said it was a bit low. I think that's an understatement. You were quite off target, although you seemed to recover in the fourth quarter. But can you just tell us about a little bit about transformation? Second question relates to your bursaries for your postgraduate students. I see it was not the number that you had indicated that you want to give bursaries to. But what I'd like to know is what contract do we have with these students? Are they employees within the institution, or are they bursaries given to outside students? And what kind of contract do we have with them to be able to serve us for a period or so? The third question would relate to your 25% operating expenses increase. Now, one could understand that you cut back during COVID-19, and therefore your operating expenses were lower. But what lessons have you learned from COVID-19 that you can take forward to ensure that we can trim expenditure and perhaps do away with certain kind of functions that were performed, but still maintain overall quality of our gardens and quality of service? So those would be the three questions that I have for now. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you so much, Honorable
Singh.
Colleagues, can I see Honorable Brian?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I would just like to commend Sandy for achieving such a significant section of their targets. I know there were some findings that have been made, but I think on the whole, what they've managed to achieve, taking into consideration the impact of COVID, which I know had a huge negative impact on their functionality for a significant period of time. That should be commended. I'm very glad to see that the Kids and Gardens project is back up and running. I know that was something that members of our committee and myself and colleagues as well raised on previous occasions, how important it is for our children, school children, to be spending time in these gardens and facilities. And it's really good to see the department has listened and taken that to heart and has now exceeded the target in terms of number of kids in gardens. So that really is wonderful. There is obviously a need to sort out that matter of the payments for staff development. The development of staff within Stanby is a huge, a hugely important thing, particularly taking into account the current economic challenges that are facing the country. We need to make sure that we empower and skill as many people as possible. And then I've got a couple of just general questions. The first one is the ongoing issue of succulents being poached across the country, in particular in the Northern Cape. I think it is called Conophytum, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a very, very small succulent that is quite sought after in the Far East. As I understand, that's where the majority of our poached succulents are illegally being smuggled to. I just want to find out if there are any ongoing studies into the poaching of succulents, and also whether or not any of these have been officially deemed critically endangered species, and if so, whether we could have access to some of that information, if that could be shared with the committee. And then the second question is just in terms of access to our botanical gardens. This was also something that was raised over the past couple of years in terms of ensuring that local people, South Africans, are able to afford to access our gardens on a regular basis, and that it isn't really a thing for more privileged people and tourists only. I just want to find out how we are doing and whether or not we are measuring the number of locals making use of facilities, particular facilities such as Kirstenbosch Gardens, and if we've seen an increase there. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, dear colleague. Chairperson of Sandy, he reported progress on the residential youth stimulus employment program. I just want to understand the impact and the extent it has on fighting unemployment inequality. Yes, and poverty, in the sense that, are you keeping these young kids for good, or is it for a specific period? And then if for a specific period, what happened post this? Are you able to proudly say that indeed we create employment? That's the first. To the CEO, one wants to understand whether all your botanical gardens were or are affected by land plague, and if some of them are affected, which are those ones, and how are you resolving it, or how have you resolved it, if it is already resolved? Then the other issue, you know, you don't, there was one province where he didn't have a botanical garden, but the last time I think he reported to you that you have used it, if I'm not mistaken, not all. Maybe you share with us the progress that you face. And then also we want to know, how are you expecting to secure more land for establishing new botanical gardens in the future, because if you're talking of biodiversity, they would need to have more of that. And then also looking at the historical background of this, the way we come from. You know, there are those provinces that, like my own provinces, only the one that you've taken over from the province. And then in others is so historically, especially where in the reduced a Pakistan area, including the other things, so where black people face, you know, the issue that I'm talking about. Then I want to understand whether you have any such plan. And then the other issue that one wants to get clarity, you need to explain to us what it means that as an institution you were accredited as a direct access entity of the Green Climate Fund and associated benefits that comes with us to the country. Maybe if you can explain that to us, we'll be in a better position to understand. I see Chairperson, your microphone is already on. You want to start?
Chairperson. Yes, maybe I should just start, Chairperson. The question on the job opportunities, indeed, it is for a limited period, but we are working very hard to align all the human capital instruments. We now have a program, Khurumsebenza, that is unfolding. When we create these job opportunities, we also look into other long-term to medium-term opportunities for these students where they are assigned to different institutions in the environment sector, but also dovetailing with the internal policies of SANBI, that some of these students, when they are doing their postgraduate studies in terms of PhD, they are assigned for a much better period when they finish their students, but also aligning it with the human resources policy of the SANBI where scarce skills are supposed to be absorbed. So indeed, those job opportunities are for the short term, but the effort is towards appointing them in the environmental sector. This is why we are also talking about the human capital strategy for the sector, Chairperson, which is also a policy under review, so that we can look long-term into the skills needs of the sector being driven both by DFSE and the SANBI as an institution. So we are very much aware of those shortfalls, but working very hard policy-wise to create that environment for our young people to be employed long-term for sustainable livelihoods. Thanks, Chair. And I will request the CEO to add as he responds to the other aspects on this matter.
Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and the Chairperson of the Board. There are a few questions that I've also referred to my colleagues to add on to. The question around the payroll, of course, I indicated that we are not proud of. Target as adjusted. We know that 1% of the payroll would have to be spent on this specific area of staff development and training. The current APP, of course, is working along those lines to make sure that we achieve that 1%. And we have seen at the time within that financial year or the previous financial year under review at the moment, we had made some reprioritization in terms of the budget that we had to other forms of operations in the sense that we ended up with that target as it was. I need to indicate that not everything that comes from the grant covers all our expenses. The operational expenses are covered through own income. And in that regard, when we had strain with no income targets being met because of the restrictions that we had due to COVID. It was difficult for us to pitch it at 1%, which is the acceptable level as such. So since the lifting, of course, we had to change that target to make sure that it's up to 1%. So that is one part on the payroll spend. But when it comes to transformation, the chair of the board did speak to the fact that the current board approved the transformation chapter. It talks to a number of issues beyond EE targets that are prescribed by law, to be in terms of spending, so in terms of geographical access, in terms of the access to the services that are provided, all areas pertaining to transformation are covered in that. We have made strides to make sure that we go through all the guidance and interface with all the workers. And that process is ongoing to make sure that areas of concerns associated with transformation are addressed through this charter that was crafted through a consultative process in terms of its implementation in the area. As much as it's a statement of intent, there's an implementation plan that covers a number of areas of transformation that this organization would have to pursue. So if you look at the staff composition and how recruitment is done, and also if you look at the different areas and the distribution of our guidance, for example, the reason why the chairperson, honorable chair, spoke about Northwest is because we said there should be a geographical balance in terms of all these assets being in all provinces as much as possible. Of course, some have more than others. And I think it's a journey that we continue to pursue within the available financial means in that regard.
Yes.
When it comes to bursaries, of course we contract these students
from okay, there
are three or four different forms. The chairperson has spoken about one big one that we're pursuing in this current financial year at a larger scale, where we'll get these young people for 2 to 3 years on board, the graduates across the board, the PhDs, the masters, the honors, coming on board, remunerated differently depending on their qualifications, and taken through a program that is crafted with mentors, with the proper incubation program, and making sure that they are ready for the work environment. Some of them, that's what we want to see, through the organizations that are hosting them, may be taken over or can find opportunities, and that gives them a better opportunities as they are with us in that process. And we are looking at in excess of 1,000, 1,050 that will be recruited very soon. But with the year under review and the progress that we have reported, we had those numbers that in total came to 242 at different levels. I did indicate the work integrated learning program, those that would only qualify after they've been exposed to experiential learning, as I indicated. We take them on, we give them that opportunity, we keep them for the period that is required, from 6 months to a year, and then we expose them to what is required and assist them in that process with mentors supporting them. When it comes to postgraduates, I did indicate that it's in two forms. The one form is that we assign a mentor and make sure that they finish their research programs on record time with the support that they require. And that accelerates them, especially in critical skills that we need to have people on. And then there are bursaries that we give to students who are in different universities. Those that qualify within the and meet the eligibility criteria, and then we fund them while they are still there at the university. So the contract is from a bursary perspective, not necessarily that they are on board with us. And we have seen that over the years, these kinds of interventions, most of the entry-level staff members have gone through some of these programs in one form or another. And those that are finding spaces in the sector beyond Sunbeam are also well prepared to take up those opportunities because of this intervention. So the area around the lessons that we have learned from COVID that we want to take forward, there are so many of them. We've just commissioned our teams, our management teams, to work on documenting that, to be able to inform our operational modalities, but also within the framework of how public service would have to work. There are a number of things that we have learned that we can cover a lot of ground, even if it's not face-to-face. The use of technology in whatever form, different from how we used to do before, and interfacing with a variety of stakeholders in our networks in different forms that we used to do before. So we could cover a lot of ground, but we are looking at that and analyzing that to inform what can make or land up being an operating policy moving forward. We are not there as yet, as that analysis is being done. There are many other areas as well, of course, Honorable C, in terms of cost saving. I mean, there's less travel, of course. There are many things that can be covered even without traveling and spending time in different areas. And that is also one area that we are beginning to see, and we've seen that when it comes to certain items of spending, CFO, if she wants to, will be able to also talk to those details. We have commissioned for, or we are just about to commission for a work study, of course, that also looks at different areas of critical importance on how best then the staff complement is directed to areas that need special attention and focus. Honorable Bryant, on the matter of succulents, you're correct. It's quite an area of concern. Of course, working with an integrated team that has been set, including ourselves, DFFE, SANPAC, WWF, and other NGOs that are part of this program, and including the provincial authority in Northern Cape, and setting up an institutional mechanism to respond to this, including law enforcement agencies on board. So there is a team that is set up from an integrated perspective with an integrated program. Of course, when it comes to funding, we play a role where some are confiscated. Of course, many are confiscated. They are taken to us for care and keep while the court cases or the law enforcement related processes are in process. But we've got plans, of course, which would involve, but one amongst others, the reintroductions and many other things. But your question was specific to whether there are ongoing studies. We are keeping records in terms of what can inform the future. The trends analysis is part of what we are doing. I got a sense that you were calling for, at some point, also a look at this particular matter in detail in terms of trends, which is part of what, from a scientific perspective, we are also doing. But just to indicate that we are very, very, very much concerned about this, hence the response mechanisms that are put through in the integrated plan from that team that I'm referring to, which brings together all the other parties. The staff development program takes a number of means in terms of the SANBI being very much a leader in thought leadership when it comes to biodiversity and also scientific areas. The issue of career ladder, the issue of supporting scientists to progress, the issue of publications, all of those things are being done. We have since reinstated the bursary program internally, and I'm proud to indicate that we have covered a lot of ground at different levels across the board, just to make sure that we are way ahead in terms of the work that we do in our mandate. Access to botanical gardens, we've taken that. COO, if you may want to come into on this particular aspect. Suffice to say that when it comes to pricing, at some point we need to reflect that we have implemented a differentiated pricing system. It's being piloted or has started being implemented at Kirstenbosch. So those that are not residents of the country, foreign nationals and others, would pay a different amount, or they pay a different amount, entrance fee, than the locals. Every Tuesday, of course, senior citizens will access these gardens free, all of them, which is part of the enhancing that access, but targeted to senior citizens in that regard. And our pricing systems will take a number of things into consideration, depending on the location, input costs, the offerings, product offerings and services that we offer in that specific area, and many other things that form part of the criteria in dealing with that part. The chairperson did reflect on the presidential stimulus and Insurenza. Of course, in the two installments of the presidential stimulus program, we had taken those young people for the period that we took and assigned them to specific areas and with teams that were supervising them, and we've found that some do find and get opportunities using that experience as reference to say, we've been exposed to this, we've done this, and that gives them a space ahead.
Can you be specific for the period where you've taken these young people?
The presidential stimulus program, there were two installments of this in the last financial year that is under review and the one before. Of course, some of them came in and started a bit later than they were supposed to. It was meant to be a 12-month program, and some of them, if I'm not mistaken, CEO can confirm, had to work 6 to 8 months, depending on when they came. We can verify the actual number of months, and it was for that, the allocation was for that specific financial year, including recruitment, posting, and then exit. We do keep records of those that came on board. The chair referred to in the last financial year, I think it was 900 and something in terms of the number. I don't have my document here for the other year prior to that. When is there for the 2 years that Zambia has been participating in that? After the time period, then they will exit and use that experience or use that as reference, as I indicated. There's no long-term contract with Zambia in terms of them having to work for Zambia after the expiry of the period. So it's timed for that period. Honourable Chair, you raised this issue of the whether all botanical gardens are affected by land claims. We are aware that, let me rather say, when we take over the botanical garden, the issue of land claims are looked at, and then we work with the respective government departments, DFFE, DARAT, and them to deal with those matters. So when we take over and are assigned by the minister to be the management authority, all those matters should have been resolved. But then what we understand is that land claim processes are continuous, in the sense that one may not say that when everything is cleared now, there may not be another installment coming in future. Triangle Botanical, National Botanical Garden was also affected in this regard. And we had to go through that whole process until we got clearance that we can then take over and continue with the management of that botanical garden. In the Northwest, we are still continuing. We got to have areas identified, working with the provincial authorities and agencies that by. We have done the analysis of the areas that were potential for the establishment, and that say this is exactly the area where we are going to. But we are pursuing that because we need to have one botanical garden in Northwest. So the process is not where I can report now and say everything is good now. We have signed off on the preferred areas. Suffice to say that the analysis of that has been has been or aware of, and I was also party to that process as well. When it comes to expansion, there are areas that we have done expansions on the existing. You know, the head of Porter being supported through WWF, also Walter Sisulu. We are working on and finalizing the expansion to the western side as well. So are other areas that we have identified in the low field with potential for expansion. So is the expansion of the existing. But the expansion when it comes to the new facility, it's this process that we are running in Northwest. It doesn't mean that each province must only have one, where the opportunities and the financial means for that and meeting all the criteria. It's one area that we want to always do in line with our botanical garden expansion program, which has since been or which has been approved by the board. Colleagues, Kamen, would you want to reflect on the anything that I've left on circulars?
Okay, I think we well covered. Thank you.
COO.
CE all covered. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, CFO.
CEO, I think there was just one item on the number of young people who were able to absorb after the presidential project. We were able to absorb 43 young people across the garden through the funds that we were able to raise from our partners, and we have kept them for, I think they are now in their second year as we speak. Thanks.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, that's how far we can go with the responses.
Before I allow others to come in, CEO, I think maybe you need to tell us, give us more details on this presidential youth project. Because I hear you saying that the exit, maybe give us the fee for the 2 years wherein you've been involved in the program in writing, and then the exit, and then once the contract terminates, then there's nothing, you can't even trace them, you don't know where they are. Whether that training, are you able to assess the impact of the training, or it was just a tip off to say, President said we must do this, and it has to happen, at the end you don't care, because there's a lot of youth apathy to that effect and the impact these programs are having on the young people. And then I should think my question on land claim was very direct. You just brush it to say, like Toy and Lou, can you go back as well and give us the list of those botanical gardens that were underclaimed, because you say you think they could have been resolved, not sure about that, but you understand the issue of can you go back and get the things and come with specific details for that issue. Those are the two that on my part. Do we have follow up questions for this? Then, if there's no follow-up question, I think I have issues to also raise with the chairperson and CEO. You remember last year, we instructed yourself, SANFAS, and the Marine Living Resource Fund, including the Ismangalis, to develop a joint outreach program that will make sure that education and awareness programs are brought to schools, particularly those that are closer to your part in the rural and township areas. And then from where I'm sitting, I thought you'd be trying to report to us on that one. It appears that each entity is working in silos, which I want Flora to also comment, which is different to what the committee resolved, the GDG is here as well. Because that's the issue. You can't have the situation in this post-democratic state. You find kids, for instance, staying next to this park or botanical garden. They've never had sight of them. They don't even know what is happening in those parts or gardens. And we said that we don't hear anything about that. Maybe you want us to then call a little way in you, then come back and report, because this was the committee resolution. You want to talk on it. And then I also then want to link it. Let's go back to Memory Lane, CEO. You recall 2020 Corona. The president pronounced that the biodiversity economy was a priority. Furthermore, that the biodiversity economy is central to South Africa's tourism industry and building the resilience of communities to climate change. And then at the time, Flora, I also want your comments now, when the CEO will be commenting. The department committed to work with yourself towards you becoming financially sustainable on their own. Can you then tell us now where you are? In line with what the department has committed at the time, to say you can be able to implement some of the projects without relying on the fiscal. That's the issue that one wants to know now, that say the minister has committed, and then let's hear the progress of that effect now. If you're not ready, you let us know, but you can also present that report in life. Are you ready?
Chair, we have noted the two areas that would come back in terms of the details on all facilities associated with or that may have been subjected to land claims or have any threats from land claims perspective. I only referred to Prando on that basis, and the fact that we worked with the department's consent until we got the clearance to continue with the management in line with our mandate. But we'll go back and provide that in writing, Chairperson. So is the area in terms of the details, as much as the CFO did speak about the 43 absorbed in the time period that we were involved in 2 years. I'm hearing Chair also looking at the qualification of the impact of the problem in totality, looking at other areas as well. We'll be able to deal with these two aspects. On the last one, I think the one for environmental education and awareness, of course, consolidated all the areas that we were supposed to consolidate in with the guidance that we received from the portfolio committee, and in detail talking to all the gardens that we have and the types of programs that we have, the stakeholder interfaces that we have, and the plans that are there in a consolidated format of what SANBI does following the prescripts as guided at that time. So the question on the biodiversity economy, Chair, yes, the Chair is correct. SANBI is the coordinator or plays a critical role in supporting the work of the scientific authority. The scientific authority is established in terms of the regulations, TOPS in particular, but also in line with the Act itself to provide policy, scientific advice that will inform action, especially when it comes to trade and related matters. On the part of trade associated with biodiversity economy, on the wildlife side, of course, we provide those what we call non-detrimental findings, or we respond to the fact that whether The trade that may be proposed will have detrimental impact on the species in the wild, on the survival of species in the wild. That is but one area. There are many other areas where we provide trade advices. But when it comes to the area around bioprospecting as well, which we are also looking at the moment, our team representatives also form part of the bioprospecting a team committee that advises the department when it comes to the final decision on matters of bioprospecting and related permits. In that regard, we participate. We are now exploring the program with the DSI on how best then can we improve our participation in processes that relate to bioprospecting. Not as much work as the level that we wanted to mature at the moment. But in relation to financial sustainability, I did indicate that the grant covers most of the areas associated with the COE, compensation of employees, but operations is covered through what we raise ourselves. So the access and the activities, the partnerships, the scientific services that we are looking at currently, the chairperson referred to wildlife forensics, the DNA analysis as a service, veterinary services as a service, genetic analysis as a service. So we have prioritized some of those scientific areas as well to play a part in the manner of them becoming services that could be paid for, hence our investments in those spaces, and investments in capacity, investments in capabilities, and those are the things that we are pursuing to respond to what the chair has indicated. In terms of our schedule, of course we are not in the same category as those other entities that will be able to generate income in totality. So we're still pursuing that, but this is one area that Chair is saying that we need to respond further in detail on. I don't know whether Kamel would want to come in on the scientific side and biodiversity economy.
Of the biodiversity economy. Sandy,
can we see you, please?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to add to what CEO has said about Sandy's contribution to the biodiversity economy. We are mobilizing donor funding to support our contribution, and one particular example is a global environmental facility initiative. It's a 5-year project which is led by the department, and SANBI is supporting it. And it's looking at biodiversity economy and the role of protected areas. So it's focusing on catalyzing financing and also building capacity for the biodiversity economy. So, Chair, that is just one of the examples of a big donor-funded project in this regard. Thank you.
Before you leave, I asked a question on you being accredited as a direct access entity of the Green Climate Fund and the associated benefit to that effect. I think you are the right person to respond to that question, because you are talking about donor funding. So
yes,
I think to say, explain to us what does that mean to be accredited as a direct access entity of this Green Climate Fund, and then also the associated benefits of the country.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. What this means is that SANBI can directly access funding without having to go through another body like the UNDP, for example. it can directly play the role of mobilizing the funds for projects in South Africa around biodiversity adaptation and climate change. So the role that we play as a direct access entity is to work with all the partners, different levels of government across the sectors, agriculture, health, in terms of adaptation and climate change projects. So what we do is to bring together all the different stakeholders to facilitate the development of proposals around climate change and adaptation, following the criteria that are set by the Green Climate Fund, and then submitting those proposals through the Green Climate Fund for funding. So, Honourable Chair, at the moment we've got six big draft proposals that we're working on with all the different stakeholders and going through the Green Climate Fund process to get them approved for funding and thereafter implemented. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
DDG Flora.
Good morning, honorable members, chairs of the public entities and colleagues. Chair, regarding the, I just wanted to make one comment regarding the issue of CIFAN and our collaboration with Sandy to indicate that we are collaborating with Sandy in respect of developing what we call biodiversity management plan. As you know, these are instruments that are used to implement measures to protect survival of species in the wild. Our colleagues in RCSM are very active in respect of enforcement-related matters regarding the poaching of cycles, working together with the law enforcement agencies. Then just a quick comment in respect of the work that Sandy is doing around ensuring access to the gardens and to local people. I think the CEO has already elaborated on, and Chairperson, on any given day, I can bet that if we were to visit at least some of the facilities like Pretoria Zoo, the Botanical Gardens in Pretoria and Walter Sisulu, you will be met by groups, especially of school children that are visiting this site. I'm yet to have an experience elsewhere across the country, but at least for those ones, I am well aware that they are quite active on any given day in respect of the visitors, especially young people visiting. I suppose that probably some may need to look at a facilitated program for the elderly, especially seeing that on any given Tuesday they give them free passes to this facilities. We might want to look at how we get Bugogo from the townships, from Mamelodi, elsewhere across the country to come and just enjoy the aromas that our botanical gardens are offering. Regarding integrated awareness program, Chairperson, just to indicate that within DFSE, awareness is facilitated by the Chief Directorate Communication. They develop a comprehensive awareness program for the whole year in which we make input as respective branches. You will have seen in the last few days or since the month started, just to give an example, that they are on a very aggressive campaign during this Arbor Month in respect of encouraging people to be planting trees. And you would have seen that last week the Deputy Minister spent some time in Mbombela, and part of that particular program is to contribute towards Arbor Month and the 10 million tree program target that has been
set to be achieved. So that is part of the ongoing awareness program that the department is running. And just to indicate that further to that, you would have seen that they are also supporting the branch biodiversity and conservation on the upcoming launch of the biodiversity economy investment portal. So this is an online investment portal that we will be launching. We have pre-qualified, if I would use the word, a number of sites across the country that lend themselves to private investment. We have packaged these sites in respect of what type of biodiversity economy investment opportunities exist. And this will be available online for prospective investors to then invest in those areas. This is just but one area of work that we are doing around the biodiversity economy. I need to indicate that besides, there's about 12 sites that we will be profiling, and the majority of those sites are actually community-owned sites also. But the site is not only limited to those sites that we have pre-qualified, but also will include all the other nature reserves owned by the management authorities that do have biodiversity investment opportunities that can be made available to private investors. You will be aware that both Ismangaliso and FENPAS have respectively held investors roadshows. So we're hoping through the investment portal we'll also be creating a link for these entities. Obviously, Sandy will also have to come on board at some stage with some of the projects that may lend themselves to investment opportunities to be included into this investment portal, as I'm indicating. Just one issue, I suppose, that the CE did address the nature of whether Sandy can financially sustainable without depending on government grants. As you have seen in the presentation, that the government grants constitute almost 70% of their funding requirements. I need to indicate that Sandy is one of those institutions within the DFF system that has been able to leverage external funding, especially donor-funded grants, to support most of their programs. Hence, you will see that the portfolio of their donor-funded program over the years has grown substantially. We are also working together with Sandy on a number of these donor-funded programs to ensure that Sandy becomes the implementing agent in this program. Then, Mr. Mungezi did make reference to the support that Sandy is providing to the wildlife trading issues, and also the fact that they also participate in the Bioprospecting Forum. And the Bioprospecting Forum is where we consider applications related to bioprospecting, where a prospective applicant would like to develop a particular plant derivative for economic use also. And in some instances, you will be aware that they may work with what we call indigenous knowledge holders. You will be aware that this year that in a historical fit, we offered the Koi in the Fen community an amount of about $12 million that was paid over to them as part of the rooibos agreement that was entered into years ago. Just lastly to indicate that the role of Sandy as our premier, so let's refer to it, our premier biodiversity scientific institution is quite critical, especially when it comes to supporting this kind of science that we need to be undertaking related to biodiversity, both within and outside protected areas. So they play a very critical role in ensuring that, one, that the science that they are driving is also translated into policy. So they are supporting the various policy initiatives that are being undertaken by the department. We are now working together with SANDIC to look into how we enhance the scientific capacity across the board. And when I say across the board, I mean in the sector, in the public sector environment, because this is one area where we are concerned that over the years, especially within the provincial authorities, that science that then support conservation has been eroded over the years. So one of the things that we will be looking into, and my team will be engaging with the executive of SANDI tomorrow, will be to look at what model we can put into place to ensure that we support the science that needs to be undertaken within the protected areas. As a country within a region that has got one of the biggest mammal population, if I were to say so, we have to continue to provide leadership, especially when it comes to the science and the conservation related to those animal species, the big five especially. And SANDI really plays a very critical role in that particular space. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Before you leave, did you? It's not about, maybe let me explain our instruction and resolution to your friends, SANDI, SANFAS, and Isimangalisa. We said you must develop a joint outreach program to make sure that education and awareness programs are brought to schools, particularly those in rural and township areas. And then the issue here, the question was very straightforward to say, did you do what we directed you to do? Because it's not about the kids visiting the botanical park or going to the Kruger National Park. Because the issue, we wanted you to implement a program that will expose the young children in rural schools to opportunities available and provide better to fight poverty, inequality, and unemployment. I'm not getting that kind of thing either. Maybe because this is your responsibility in terms of entity oversight, you have to present the detailed report to that effect. And then the other issue that I see you not attending to, I quoted the President's summer address to change. And then yourself, when you presented your budget, you committed to where these entities would be financially sustainable on their own. Then you are coming in, this is the minister is here, because minister made the undertaking that this is going to happen in order to assist these entities so that they cannot completely rely on the system. Maybe because of the time constraints, we'll ask you to submit that report for vote. And as the lead department, isn't that this entities are your implementing agents, and then you need to do that to say we need that, because that report has been long pending. It became a resolution of this committee that was finally adopted by Parliament, especially on the issue of programs to expose the rural schools. Maybe you'll have to give us that feedback, and maybe if this resolution is not implemented, some people must be able to explain to us why didn't they implement our resolution, because we resolved it on this matter. You want to say something, or you want to align yourself with what I proposed, especially the issue of the issue, because you have committed that. I want to know the progress with regard to working with all these entities. not going all over. We want the actual specifics.
Chairperson, let me align with your directive for us to come back with these two reports. One is on the integrated outreach program for the three entities. We will work towards developing that detailed report for submission through to the committee, and then we will also submit another report on how to make these entities financially sustainable. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Then we then move to Santa. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chair and honorable members, thank you very much and good still the morning. Good morning once again. I am not going to waste the time of the committee, Honorable Chair, in introducing our delegation. Safe to say that we have in attendance myself as the Chair of the Board, as well as the chairpersons of the various committees of the Board. So that they can hear what the committee raises and also make sure that in the, as they execute the oversight work and the board continues its work, they get it firsthand. Ms. Mayatula Khoza was here at the beginning of the meeting and she had an emergency that she had to attend to. I would like to apologize on her behalf. She left about 20 minutes ago, Chairperson. And then, and also from, we also have the acting CEO, Ms. Silo, who is also accompanied by executives from the organization, including support staff, one responsible for planning, as well, Ms. Banding, as well as and support from the office of the CEO. So that is our delegation this morning. Chair, you had in your opening remarks started to speak about some of the issues around our annual performance or our annual report, and we noted your the reminder that we must not miss our deadlines in terms of submission, and you also mentioned issues around the aging and some of the issues that you raised in your beginning, at the beginning. We've noted those, and I'm not sure whether we will have another opportunity to present the whole year, but what the way we want to approach today, although we're taking quarter three and quarter four as the two quarters, that in some of the instances we'll talk about the whole year, and in some instances we're not going to do so, Chair, and where we don't do so, we'll probably indicate. Part of the reason, Chair, is that it is already, we've already had a year, I mean, we're looking at quarter three and quarter four. At the same time, we've also on our side finished the annual report, so we've got a kind of a full year view of where the organization is at and its performance. And also, for example, you mentioned, Chair, the audit outcomes, which are not quarter three, quarter four outcomes, but they are the full year. So we're going to, at some point, move from a kind of an annual briefing in certain areas, but in certain areas we're going to talk about more specifically quarter three and quarter four. And also, Chair, the last point I would like to make in that regard is the fact that our target in some instances, not in all of the instances, are cumulative, and in so far they are they are cumulative. Some of the things that you will see in quarter three, we might have had non-achievement in quarter three, but things would then improve in quarter four around the same target. So having said that, Chair, then I will then get to some of the just highlights of what we want to say today. One is just to make the point, Chair, that CENTOS, most of our revenue comes from tourism, and the committee would note that this has been a very, very difficult time with regard to the tourism sector. There are green shots of recovery in terms of the sector in general, and CENTOS specifically is also benefiting from that recovery. And I'm happy to say, Honourable Chair and Members, that what you are seeing in terms of our recovery, tourism recovery, that it has been largely driven by the domestic market, which means that more and more South Africans are starting to get into our parks and attending up and being regular visitors in our parks. It is an important issue for us from a transformation point of view. We all know that our national parks are part of our natural and cultural heritage. And insofar as that is the case, we do want more and more South Africans not only to visit the park, but to also experience and learn and connect with their heritage. Of course, from a revenue point of view, the receipts that we get from some of the international tourists, we tend to get a little bit more high because they often buy or trade or come into the country with different currencies, which are often better than the rand, and therefore and they tend to have a higher spend in our parks, and so we continue to want to also invite our international tourists into our country, because not only are we wanting to increase the numbers, but we also want to increase the length of stay, the amount of money that's being spent, so that it affects or improves our own revenue. Of course, there are certain things that still remain a challenge with regard to the sector and its recovery. Those include issues like airlift, and we're also seeing here and there that in some areas the impact of COVID-19 is still being felt, and in places like China, there's still also which is an important source market for us, there might be also some threats here and then, or that there might be a resurgence of COVID-19. We continue to monitor the situation, Chairperson, and we work with the industry as part of the industry to make sure that we are also an integral part of this. To this end, Chairperson, in the following week, next week, we are going to be participating in a tourism leadership three-day conference, and in that conference we're also looking at the recovery as part of the sector. We're looking at the recovery. So Chair, this is important for us for the context of our performance. So we've had to, in many areas, reduce or cut costs, because we're trying to make sure that as an organization we still meet our targets in spite of the performance on the revenue side. Or put differently, on the fact that we have seen we still are recovering as an organization. So we have achieved about 86% of our targets. In some instances, these targets were exceeded, and the CEO's presentation, we talked to some of those. And those are across the board in terms of our own plan and as an entity. We also, Chair, there are some areas where we have not achieved our targets, and we'll speak to those as we do the presentation. And I would not take too much time because mine is really to introduce the thing. Just on the audit side, Chairperson and honourable members, we also have an unqualified audit or audit opinion rather. There are some findings and on compliance and performance information. We are concerned about this, and because when we compare with prior years with regard to performance information, we have this is the first time that this is happening, and it is a matter of concern to us. And one part of the thing that we, apart from just looking at our own audit action plan, management has had two workshops so far for root cause analysis, and so that the audit action plans can have been developed. But on the performance side, Chair, there is a performance improvement plan that the organization has, but what we've also now instituted is to institutionalize management of performance in all our committees. So the committee chairs, as they sit here, they do have a responsibility, Chair, of ensuring that there is a performance improvement in terms of what the committee does with. And this is work that we started doing. We haven't necessarily seen the fruits of this yet, but as it happens, Honourable Chairperson, is that we are laying the foundation for better reporting, or rather improved reporting, improved performance, and if not exceeding our targets. So, Chairperson, just the last issue I would like to comment on that you mentioned in your earlier comment at the beginning, and again, I think this issue remains the issue of wildlife crime, and specifically the issues around rhino poaching. It is an issue for us, and we want to, and we would have wanted. Unfortunately, or maybe, and we understood why the committee could not come to Kruger National Park for an oversight visit on this issue. We could have shared a little bit more about some of the initiatives that you are taking, and also some of the challenges that we're facing. And we do need to say upfront, Chairperson, that the issue of population decline, especially in the Kruger National Park population, cannot be stopped fully if we don't deal with the issue of wildlife crime or poaching. And I think this is a big issue that doesn't just require us as an entity, it requires the rest of government and other law enforcement agencies. But having said that, we want to say that in other parks we've seen a growth of 6.2% of the population, which is now excluding the Kruger National Park, although we still have a decline in Kruger National Park, and we're concerned about it, and we're going to talk about how we can just share about what we started doing as well. But this 6.2% is above the 4% growth rate target. So it means that they can still, and rhinos can still do well in areas where poaching is very low. So our biggest problem is as an entity, and I suppose as a country, is this issue of poaching. And we do need to deal with it decisively. And the board and management are working with other stakeholders and the department under the leadership of the ministry to make sure that this happens. And then just to note that we have, as part of this, Chair, and would welcome an opportunity to come and brief the committee, if the time so allowed, on we've adopted recently a rhino conservation strategy, which includes rhino management plans for the various parks, and that where the species occur, and we are now in the process of costing that, and we would like to come, and obviously if it was possible for you to visit us in this regard, we would welcome that. And that, however, if not, we would want to at an appropriate time where the committee has got the time and wants to dedicate the and a time to look at this issue, to come and brief you and share what's in our strategy and some of the initiatives that we are taking. And then lastly, Chair, as I move on, is that we had reported before on the issue of land claims. And this is an issue that has been on our radar screen. I must also add, the part of our measures that we put in place as well as the board is to also start looking at some of your resolutions and some of the things and getting and dealing with, as we're now moving, starting from the upcoming board meeting, a standing item on what were the issues that were raised by the committee and what were the resolutions taken and how are we performing. So we are starting from the upcoming, we've got a board meeting on the 21st chair, and it is for the first time that we're going to be having as a standing item reporting on some of the work that this committee, this we see as an important thing for our accountability work, especially to this committee, as well as to just make sure that we exercise the necessary oversight and keep our eye on the ball in terms of feeding the committee or responding to some of your concerns or issues that you raise. So having said that, Chairperson, if you allow me, I'm going to request the acting CEO, Ms. Silo, to then take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also try to respond to some of the issues and concerns that you raised. We know the work in progress. Can I hand over to the acting CEO to focus on those items that have been in red and yellow? Over to you, acting CEO.
Yes, good morning, Honourable Chair. I'd like to recognize Minister and Deputy Minister as well as the DG in absentia, and to greet all the Honourable Members present today, as well as the Chairperson of SANParks and the members of the Board of SANParks who are with us today. I'm not sure if the Chairperson's Assembly and the CEO of Assembly and the colleagues are still here, and also to recognize my colleagues from the executive who have joined us here today. Honourable Chair, as per your request, we shall focus on the yellows and the reds, and I'd like to thank my board chairperson for that introduction that she made. We will find that it covers a lot of some of the issues that may have a hint of low performance, and some of them underperformance, but we'll get to them slide by slide. I'd therefore request that we go to slide 7. So Chair, I believe that actually the Chairperson of the board indicated that overall our performance for 2021-22 sits at 82%, which for us is commendable, given, as she indicated, how catastrophic the year had been for us from a tourism perspective, and how the inability to raise sufficient tourism revenues impacted on operations and our ability to fulfill our obligations, because this is a very critical matter to always note. But nevertheless, 82% was achieved in totality. as the chairperson of the board also indicated, a lot of our indicators are cumulative. So what at times is may appear as an underperformance in a previous quarter is often corrected by the next quarter, and we're able to catch up as demonstrated with this particular issue, which speaks to the rehabilitation of degraded land. Quarter three, we were still underperforming, not failing, but underperforming slightly. But by the end of quarter four, we had exceeded the target. And this was due to receiving additional funding from our mother department as well. Can we move on to slide 11? Chairperson, you have in your own introductory remarks, Honourable Chair and the Chairperson of the Board have spoken about this matter of wildlife crime, which continues to vex us as an entity, continues to vex the entire conservation the sector. But as much as from an indicator point of view, we are in the red. We do have corrective actions. Our board chair has invited you to allow us to present to you our rhino management plans, our rhino conservation strategies, to help you have a better appreciation of what we're doing in this regard, in this area. It is a continuously difficult situation to manage, particularly in the Kruger, as much as in our other five parks that have rhino outside of the Kruger, we're seeing a growth. So Kruger National Park continues to be the center of poaching, of rhino poaching in sand parks. The next slide, which is slide 12, also speaks the continuation of the issue of rhino poaching in KNP. We are talking about our corrective action there, which is very specific to the rhino conservation strategy, Honorable Chair and members. We do trust that we will have an opportunity to share this strategy in greater detail with you at a convenient time to yourselves, outside of the normal portfolio committee, just so that we can have a very focused and detailed discussion in this matter. Slide number 13. Slide number 13 speaks to the delivery of animals to Senave National Park in Mozambique. As you may be aware, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we rely greatly on the funding by Peace Parks to achieve this particular indicator in terms of the capturing and the actual physical movement, translocation of these animals. Unfortunately for us, Peace Parks, as with us, has had its own financial challenges, and they had reduced their initial commitment to us, financial commitment to us, and we were unable to achieve this target as a result. You will note even when we speak in the next, the next briefing, that the issue about the Zinave National Park is a matter that is that has to be resolved. As much as we bring a lot of goodwill to this particular project, there are some challenges, and we will discuss further when we come back to you to discuss this particular year 2022-23, because this matter continues to impact into this new financial year. Slide 16, please. Slide 16, it really was just, it's one of those typical measures where we were able to catch up again in quarter four. As much as we're slightly off target on quarter three, and this speaks to customer satisfaction, the customer satisfaction index. So we are now in the green at the end of the financial year. Slide 18. Slide 18 speaks to the number of diverse tourism products implemented in our parks, particularly to attract domestic visitors. As our chairperson of the board indicated, the attraction of South Africans to our parks is of critical importance and was also a key transformation element attached to this. This particular indicator speaks specifically to our public-private partnership program, which, as you can understand, is driven by investor interest. And we always believe when we look at this unprecedented non-achievement of targets for this particular indicator, that this is a reflection that not only is the tourism industry limping along in terms of finding a point of recovery, but it also for us reflects that because the industry has been so badly affected, investor confidence has been also shaken. So as you can see, we had instances where we would advertise. So we advertised as per normal. There have been instances where, and this hardly ever happens, where no bids were received for some of these projects. As you are aware, the chair and honourable members, we did have an investment summit in late March, and this is part of the process in which we are going to address the issue of investor confidence in the tourism industry, and to also ensure that there's an appreciation of the existence of these types of opportunities, business opportunities within our parks. Slide 24. Yet again, Honourable Chair, we made up for this by the end of our fourth quarter, where when we were off target in quarter three, this is specifically about the QSEs. We run a lot of support initiatives, honourable members, regarding the procurement from QSEs and EMEs, particularly from around the communities around our parks. So when we were off target in Q3, we requested all divisions to put in a concerted effort to ensure that preferential procurement is implemented, and we were able to make up that, which is actually in itself notable because in Q4 already we were dealing with a procurement moratorium as a result of the AfriForum challenge to preferential procurement. But nevertheless, we did achieve that. Slide 26, which will be followed by slide 27 after I've spoken to 26. Thank you. Honorable Chair, as I said, yet again this one, we were also able to catch up. Because the implementation plan regarding integrated transformation, SANParks had not been approved in Q3 as had been planned. EXCO approved this in January, which is the beginning of Q4. And therefore we were able to catch up. Not only were we able to catch up, but even before the actual formal approval, we had begun to implement initiatives that speak to the transformation program. And as a result, by the time we had an approval in Q4, 86% of the plan was already implemented. And then number of beneficiaries from targeted groups trained. This is specifically speaking to our emerging farmers, emerging wild game farmers. These are the farmers that we donate and sometimes sponsor with regards to game. We were off target. We were still trying to find our feet in Q3, having just emerged from COVID. And as you can appreciate, the fact that this is not the type of training that could have been done virtually. But by Q4, we were able to exceed that target. Another number. 36. We are still not achieving this particular, we still haven't at the end of the financial year, and this has been migrated to this new financial year. And it speaks to the most important asset that the organization has, which is the human capital. The strategy was developed and workshopped with EXCO in December 21. We did submit to EXCO, but EXCO had its own concerns about the quality of the strategy, and here it is us being self-critical, because on the one hand we could have just approved a strategy that was going to be ineffectual. And we then turned it back and requested that as much as we acknowledge that it will appear as an underperformance, that this is a strategy like all strategies, which is very critical. But it is even more critical because we haven't had a fully coherent HCM strategy before, not only coherent, comprehensive HCM strategy before in Sanparks. It has been enhanced, and as I indicated, this particular indicator will spill into the current financial year, 22-23. I don't know, I think that was, the presentation has disappeared from my side. Slide 39. The presentation has disappeared from my side.
Not only your slide, even
also. Okay, that's fine. I'll just use my own slide then, if you can still see it. You can't see anything?
Mm-hmm.
It was being driven by the co-host. Ms. Bongo?
I can share my Netflix player if you don't mind.
Okay. Please do that and just move quickly to slide 39.
I've been disabled from sharing, Chair.
Let me see if I'm allowed to. Well, something.
Oh, it's back now.
Oh, it's back.
Yes.
I think you've been given co-host status, Lucas. You want to give it a try? Because I'm also disabled from my phone.
Yes, sure, Lucas.
I'm out. Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, as you know that annually we have what we call a National Sandpats Week, where we have this free access for all South Africans to our parks. It is a very popular program. We have been running during the COVID years. We've had a Parks Week, but it has been a very muted Parks Week, much smaller and controlled very strictly with quotas by virtue of ensuring that we comply, or that we complied at that time with.
Recording in progress.
We were committed to achieving this target that typically we have Parks Week in September. We moved it to November last year because we believed at that point the restrictions will be less strict and would be able to achieve the targets that we set. However, we're off target. 28,000, give or take, people took advantage of this. It also did not help that our five national parks that generate the most revenue, and I'm talking Kalahari, Kruger, Addo, these ones we didn't open for the weekend because, as you will appreciate, we needed that revenue as well at that time. You'll also recall, even though this does not come out very apparently in this report, that in November it was when we were hit by Omicron. So our reason for not achieving this target is really quite likely also has to do with just cautiousness from the public in terms of being in crowds. Thank you. We will have the Parks Week in September this year as per normal. And our last slide where we have a red is slide 44. And slide 44 shows as well that we were able to pick up and perform against the target, the annual target in quarter four, and this speaks to the maintenance and the capitalization plan. There was a lot of prioritization and a lot of effort that was put in to ensure that we are able to achieve our maintenance plans for the year, and that put us in the green for quarter four. Morning.
Oh, okay.
He's alive.
What?
He's alive.
Chair?
It's your co-host who's making all this noise. Not me, eh? Be Dimbongo. That's the person, the microphone that is on. Proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. At this stage, I will end the report on performance against APP and hand over to the CFO to provide an overview of our 21-22 financial performance. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, CEO. Good day, Honourable Chairperson of the Committee, Honourable Members, the Minister in her absence, as well as the Deputy Minister, the Chairperson of Sandparks Board, and Ms. Pamiaga, and the members of the Board, the Sandparks Management Team. Greetings to the Chairpersons of other entities, as well as their management team as well, and colleagues. Thank you very much again, Chairperson, and the honourable members for this opportunity to present our humble contribution to this committee. Presenting the financial statement of Sandpark or financial outcome for 21-2022. It's been a very difficult year, Chairperson, as you will recall. This was the second year in which the South Africa was plagued with pandemic COVID-19. And I think what made it even much worse was the fact that in year one, as much as we're implementing a number of cost curtailment, it was better because most of us were working remotely and were locked down. the fact that now we've started to open up, it's really made it a bit difficult to keep the cost curtailment, because now when you open up operation, then those activities start generating costs for the organization. So we kick off this year with a huge deficit of about 645 million in our budget. And the reason for that is because we did not have sufficient revenue to be able to meet our expenditure obligation. We worked through with the board at that particular point in time, and we've tried to further reduce this about 488 million. At that time, the minister was very supportive to recommend a deficit to us for National Treasury. However, that has been declined. We are pleased that as much as it's been very difficult, but we've been able to achieve the results that we're presenting, which is over 80% performance achievement, which also came at a cost of a deficit of about 223 million. Because the revenue, as much as our revenue have increased by 85% year on year from COVID to the last financial year, but it's just simply not enough to be able to meet our expenditure obligation. If you move to the next slide. So this particular slide, it just show you in detail, honorable members, the comparison of the approved budget, what has been adjusted during the year. You can see the number of where. You will notice that the final budget does not have a deficit of 188 million. It's because we had to reduce our budget in order to be in line with PFMA Section 53 to make sure that we were budget for break-even. This came at a huge cost, as you can see on the last column, that there were certain areas where we experienced an over-expenditure. And again, because one has tried to balance between, you know, advertising and marketing campaign, which requires lots of investment in terms of cost in order to be able to get more visitors coming to our park. And so that shows that particular picture in this slide. If you move to the next slide, in this particular slide, then it explains what I've just indicated, that our expenditure was 12.8 billion against the 2.6 billion in revenue that has been generated, which resulted in the deficit of 223 million. Next slide. This is the statement of financial performance, formerly known as an income statement. What is interesting in this particular slide, you will see that the revenue that has been generated by the organization has actually grew from 944 million to 1.7 billion, which is a huge jump. This has been supported by the fact that our visitors have actually grown from 1.9 million 2 years ago to about 3.4. As you can see, that was quite a very good recovery. The only difference why our revenues remain depressed is the fact that we've been supported by a domestic market. Now, the difference is that as much as we appreciate the domestic market supporting SunPark, but the amount of revenue is much less because we are trying to be cheaper to the local so that we can encourage them to come to our park. Where else the international, we charge them probably two times and three times, depending on which park, in order to be able to generate more money. So that's the difference. And you will see that also on the brand, where in 2 years ago we'd received financial assistance, there were no financial assistance that was actually received by the FCT. So we had to make use of our own internal resources to be able to meet our present obligation. The expenditure hasn't grown much as compared to the previous year, which is about 12%, but revenue year on year has actually grew about 4%. As you can see, that the difference is that there's less grant in the current financial year or the year under review, whereas there was more in the previous financial year. But that's the result of the organization. So quite pleased that at least from the revenue point of view, we've been able to increase. We still remain concerned as a leadership of this organization, including the board, about the funding of the conservation. And we believe that perhaps this committee can help us so that this discussion can be on the table. That as much as the organization is trying to generate revenue through tourism operation, but we believe that there's a role that the state can play in making sure that the conservation mandates of the organization remain fully funded so that we can continue to do what we are doing for the South African. This slide also explains what I've just indicated, but it's been showing a graphical in that format what's the difference between the revenue exchange. As you can see, it's now sitting at 59%, and revenue from grants is actually sitting at 35%, while other operating incomes, they represent about 2% of the income. Next slide. So the financial statement also shows you the different component of income that is generated by the organization. As you can see, that tourism is about 50% of what has been generated, conservation followed by conservation. In under normal circumstances, you will have conservation be more, because this is where international tourists pay more fee to be able to support conservation, and it is actually switch around because of the impact. If you're looking even at the current results, we still don't see quite a good uptake of international tourists coming to South Africa in particular, especially into our park, and it's something that we are currently working on as an organization. Next slide. So in this slide, it shows expenditure. As you can see, we've actually spent about 2.8 billion, up from 2.5 billion in the previous financial year. And I've indicated that the reason why there's a difference is because the other year we were in lockdown and there were less activities as compared to the time where now we've actually opened. So the employee costs still remain our biggest line item in the organization. We are pleased to indicate that it's usually above 50%, but as you can see, it actually dropped below about 48% at this particular point in time, and mainly because we've been unable to fill most of the vacancies in the organization. It's followed by the operating expenditure, which is required to run our parks, which is at 47%. So that's the biggest component of our expenditure within the organization, Sun Park. Next slide. So this is our balance sheet, statement of financial performance. As you can see that in many components, our assets have actually dropped from 5.5 billion to about 5.1. And the main impact of that is really a reduction in our cash resource base. Cash is very much linked to the revenue that you generate. If you're unable to generate more revenue, then your cash flow will actually drop as much as possible. We've been managing our liabilities by adding quickly, as you can see, that actually dropped from 1.4 billion to about 1.2, and you can see that even in non-current liabilities, the biggest component is employee obligation, which including post-retirement medical aid, but that relatively remains flat over the next 2 years. The organization is still remain currently in liquid, as you can see that our net assets actually, which means that our assets are actually higher than the liabilities. So it remains very much liquid. Next slide. So let's provide the explanation that I've just made. Next slide. This is the cash flow statement, honorable members. You can see that the cash that has been generated by the organization from Union, and you can see that the cash that has been generated from operating activities, it's slightly higher at 2.5 billion, and as a result, that having an impact of having a negative net cash flow on from operating activities. As we increase our personal recovery, these figures should be able to turn around. You will notice that if you look towards the bottom of the cash flow statement, you will see that in the previous year, we had actually lost about 320 million in terms of cash movement between year on year, but in this particular year, it actually grew to about 483 million. And we need to get to a point where we really remain with high level of cash in the organization in order to finance not only our operation, but also to make more reinvestment, in particularly in our infrastructure that we have to keep in mind. Next slide. So that's the explanation. I just want to conclude, Honorable Chair. The Chair actually did in her opening remark to indicate that Sun Park received an unqualified audit opinion for this current financial year. The issues that have been raised in the main was issue of performance information. The issue of exceeding budget was also raised. And it's something that we are currently working on. As the Chair indicated, that there's been two workshops, one which was held by the executive because we take the audit findings of the AG very seriously, and the other one which was held by the finance team. And both of these have been converted into audit action plans, and they have already served at the audit committee of focus, and now they are going to the board. And these are currently being monitored on a monthly basis. And we're already having a planning meeting with the AG to make sure that we see much more improvement in our audit outcomes going forward. Thank you very much again, Honorable Chair, and we'll wait for the guidance of the committee as well.
CEO,
I support
the end of your presentation.
Yes, Chair, it is. This is the end of the presentation. We will take questions and comments.
Thank you so much, Chair, CEO, and the CFO. Colleagues, can I see a show of hands of colleagues who want to interact with the presentation? Can you use your microphone in the meantime, CEO? Thank you. It will be Honorable Brian, followed by Honorable Singh, and then Honorable Mbise in that order. Over to you, Honorable Brian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentations. Firstly, starting off just in terms of point 6.1 and point 6.2, my desktop calculation comes out with about 2,433 rhino remaining in Kruger Park at present. That's if we factor in the 13.4% decline, which works out to 376 animals, and we subtract that from the previous number, which was 2,809 at the end of 2020. And we've also seen another 82 animals poached this year. Is it possible to confirm whether that number is accurate, 2,433 rhinos remaining? And if not, what is the current number of rhino remaining in Kruger National Park? And also, at what point does the rhino population actually become functionally extinct? Is there a number that we get to within Kruger where we would state that that animal is functionally extinct? The integrity testing, i.e. the polygraph testing, this is a long outstanding matter, and it's something which we've raised on numerous occasions. Is polygraph testing taking place? Is it still entirely voluntary? Is it being carried out amongst a variety of different members of staff, including those in high ranks and positions, and also people slightly lower down on pay scale? Can we just have some more information in terms of that? And if it is taking place, what are the results? We did note that another two rangers were arrested for involvement in poaching in 2022. Just wondering if the integrity testing was used at all there, or if that was purely the result of a reactive criminal investigation and work that was undertaken. And again, the range of posts, the unfilled range of posts. Previously, we were informed that there were 87 unfilled range of posts at the end of 2021. What is the current status of unfilled range of posts? Are we still sitting at 87? How far along have we got in terms of filling those posts? You know, I noted the comments from Mr. Dlamini, and I sympathize with him a lot in terms of the call for increased budgets for conservation. We have mentioned this many times. We can't say that government is serious about conservation, but is not providing the requisite budget in order to protect the endangered animals, in particular rhinos. You know, our rangers are working incredibly hard, putting their lives at risk, and you know, to see the scant budget that is being provided to them in order to carry out these very, very important and dangerous responsibilities, it's just unacceptable. And we really, really would agree with Mr. Dlamini that we need to increase the budget for conservation. Chair, over the past 2 weeks, we've seen daily demonstrations on access roads into Kruger Park, burning tires and rocks, and also trees being chopped down and thrown across those access roads. I think on the R40 from Palapora to to Hoedspruit, about 20 trees were cut down and thrown across the road by people involved in the protest. I just want to know if Prukka National Park is working with any of the enforcement authorities or local intelligence to find out more about this and to address it, because that is obviously a huge issue for those accessing the park, tourism, as well as the sustainability and the finances of the park in terms of having having more people visit. The low turnout for Sand Parks Week, I just want to know, is Sand Parks working with the schools in the same way that Sandby has been running their children in gardens program to try and increase the number of people coming to the parks? And, you know, what other proactive steps have been taken to increase the number of people taking advantage of Sand Parks Week? We can't only be looking at 20,000 when you have a target of 80,000. So that is it for me for now. Thank you, Chips.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Bryant has asked a number of questions that I would have wanted to ask, so I will restrict myself to two questions. One relates to our continued reliance on funding from Peace Fox, and one appreciates that they themselves are also being under strain. What are we going to do moving forward in terms of getting these funds to perform necessary activities? And I note that we were told that there was less funding this time around in the financial year that we are discussing. So that's one question. The second one would relate to the deficit, which was originally projected at almost 680, but then it's reduced to 250 odd million, which is still quite a deficit. And during that presentation, we were told that specific infrastructure projects were cut back. Could we have an idea today or in writing of what specific infrastructure projects have to be cut back? And my second part to that question is, what are we going to do as Sand Parks to mitigate this risk of continued deficit moving forward? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable. Honorable Mutiso, what you?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all the honorable members and Sand Parks team and Sandy.
I think you can do better with that camera of you.
You mean, Chair, Matsujiro?
Speak properly.
You enjoy seeing me, too. Do I look better?
Yes,
thank you. No, sir. In October, we will be discussing the BRRR, the budgetary review and recommendations report. And I don't think we are given sufficient reason to go enthusiastically into those debates and increase the budget. Whilst I share the same sentiment with Honorable Bryant and other members that there is indeed a need for increased budget for conservation. But the question that will then arise when we discuss with BRRR is for what? Why do we need to increase money for conservation? Because it would seem that people in Sand Parks do not know what they're doing. I mean, who does not meet a KPI, 10%? Essentially, this board and this management, they are telling us that they fail to bring people to for free in the park. Such a simple KPI, bringing people for free. It speaks about marketing. It's because at the center of their preoccupation is issues of sexual assault, one by the Minister of Finance, two by the former CEO. They do not have any other thing to market some parts of.
Chairperson, I want to speak directly. That leads, in fact, that leads me to the second part of my question. We have a responsibility as this committee to arrive at a determination that there is chaos in that institution called Sandbox. And it is embarrassing because failure for us to make this reflection will make all of us accomplices. The board comes across as if they are hell-bent to finish whatever that is left in Sandbox. They are not inspiring confidence at all. The 2021 APP and all the indicators are red. Everything else that has been presented here by the acting CEO is just red. It is unacceptable. And this can only be attributed to lack of strategic management. If you had a strategic management in that institution, you will not be having what we are interfacing with. That CEO that they fired then, in fact, in my view, he was doing exceptionally well. And this Sandbox was still good standing in my view. Now, it is just chaotic what is happening there, because everyone is just in Hollywood. Over the past year, in 2020-2021, we still had that CEO who was being paid by the same institution. Now you have another acting CEO who is being paid. So it's just Hollywood. It is chaotic. It must be stopped. We must use everything else in our power to stop Hollywood from going on there. Everyone can't just be acting in that institution. So they come across as if they are hell-bent to finish everything as a left of some parts, Chairperson. So you have now this Kruger, you can't interface with anything that is conservation related or that speaks about the good integrity or image about the Kruger National Park and Sandbox in general. The very least you can do is to get the rangers who are being shot, you can get people who are being accused of sexual assault and sexual harassment and problems. And this is taxpayers' money we're talking about. The CFO has the audacity to come and tell us here and the team that no, we must increase their money for conservation. I am not convinced. How do you continue? You know very well that former CEO, for instance, is continuing to litigate. But you are now, we are told now you are appointing, you are ready, you have advertised the position of the CEO. What if you advertise and fill that position and it happens that the court of this country arrives at a different determination insofar as the issues of the CEO are concerned. Why? What is the rush? What exactly is happening in that situation? And perhaps it's time we must make a strong recommendation. If it means the minister is not as serious as we are with the deputy minister about the activities of this board and the management, we must take it upon ourselves to go and meet them. Because what is happening there, I really fail to understand what it is. And we cannot be proud. This is not something to write home about. It's something that you can tell the people that you are a public representative and Sandbox falls squarely within our jurisdiction. So I think the board there and the management must pull up their socks. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mudisa. Did I miss another hand? Honorable Singh, it's a historical hand, I suppose.
Sorry, yes, legacy hand, sorry, I'll put it down.
Thank you. We, Chairperson and CEO, we recently had, over the weekend, we were busy with a public hearing here in the Mpopo and the National Health and Forest Fires Amendment Bill. And then it happened that one community member from Matiani village, that is adjacent to Yakunda Maria village, raised a very heartbreaking matter. Where he said that you are fired from the game resources for them is Malbus. Then they get out there and then there is new land and vegetation in those communities. And then when the reason mentioned was that fire breaks or fire breaks are not treated continuously prior to fire season, as 20% of the Kruger Park burned in August 2021. Then the issue is that it was from CEO and chairperson. Your perceived non-compliance threatening the livelihoods of farmers and communities closer to the park. And I made the commitment that luckily you are coming today, I'm going to raise the stability. Then the issue here that I want clarity from you, whether yourself, you are part of the local fire protection association. And if so, is your membership fee paid up? And then are you also then able to comply, to confirm your compliance with the National Fire and Forest Fire Act in all your parts? Can you confirm that you are complying with this act? And then, if not, how soon is the non-compliance going to be complied? Because what was worrisome, those happened, your management didn't even bother to reach out for those communities. And this is a state, okay, remember. I think this is the issue that we need clarity from yourself. And then, following up, CEO, you say you need a separate briefing on the Rhino issues. We hear you, but then, as and when you're saying that, I think there's a question that one wants to get clarity from yourself. Does it actually make any sense to cite natural mortality as the reason for rhino population decline when conventional knowledge shows that rhino birth rate outpaces natural mortality? And then the follow-up question that comes to that is, why do we try to mask the impact of poaching by other natural processes? And then I want to know, what is this supposed to hide the pain that yourselves, you failed to control the poaching in South Africa National Park? Now we know that the rhino population in falling, what unorthodox approaches do you have to turn the situation around? And then, why should we trust you this time around? I think that's the question that one wants clarity on. And then the other issue that one wants clarity on is with regard to what kind or species of animals were translocated to the Zimbabwe National Park in Mozambique. And then one wants to also understand, how do we ensure that the welfare of those animals, or what are the terms of agreement that we have with Mozambique in this agreement, in this regard? And then to also say who signed off or who authorized those translocations, as we had issues around authorization of those animals in one of our meetings with the department, DFSE, including yourself. There was an issue around that. Maybe this time there's going to be clarity. And then the issue around our rhino clearing in Chad. How is it? How is it going around that? Chairperson, you were up front. We raised the issue with you, Shafi. on the land claim last time. And then you said there's been progress to that effect. It's a pity we couldn't do that oversight because it was part of the agenda. Then maybe one would propose that
can you give us a report
on writing on the progress that you've made that effect with regard to addressing the issues of land claimants around the park.
So
if you can submit that progress report in writing, that will go in
I wanted you to check something for me on your email, but it's fine if you're driving. Well, call me when you stop.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members for those questions.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask my colleagues, the acting CEO and other colleagues to respond to the question, and then I will then pick up some of the questions relating, especially relating to the issue of the CEO later on. So I'll come back, Chair, Honourable Chair, last. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for all those questions. I will request my colleagues to also address or assist me in addressing this question. Just to make a tally of the questions I have down on paper is, first question was regarding the number of rhino remaining in Kruger as per Honourable Member Bryant, who was estimating that there is 2,432 rhino that will be taken by our managing executive of conservation services, Dr. Ziba. I will take the issue of the ranger posts in Kruger. There was a question on Sandparks Week and matters to do with children and what programs we have. I will take that as well. The other question was with regards to the public protests around the Kruger and the closing of access roads, Honourable Member. That will be taken by both myself and the COO. My apologies. This would then be related to the question to do with integrity testing. I'm not sure where the COO will take integrity testing.
COO?
Yes. Yes,
ma'am. If we have to do that, we're going to still hear the whole thing.
Okay.
I believe all the colleagues, they were listening, and they know what is their roles. Can we do that than you repeating who's going to do, answer all those questions that are related to you, hand over to the CFO, hand over to the Senior Executive Conservation COO in that way than repeating the question.
Thank you. Thank you.
For this, some members need to travel from their parliamentary places.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regards to ranger posts in the Kruger National Park, we are committing that by the end of this financial year, all of those posts will be filled. We have ring-fenced funding from some of our HPM or human capital findings, or the budget, sorry, the human capital budget, to finance our priority positions and the ranger posts that are referred to fall under priority posts. With regards to the kids in parks, or rather programs that speak to children and their participation or access, we have a program called Kids in Parks, which has been Zamba for the last 2 years because of COVID. This year we have reawakened it, and we will be having 5,000 children from neighboring communities in 11 parks being exposed to our parks. Then past week, 80,000 is for us. The last year, normal year of 2019, we registered 70,000 visitors to Parks Week, honorable members. So for us, a target of 80,000 was not entirely out of scope. We obviously were hampered by the extent to which we assumed there will be normalcy back in terms of our day-to-day living. It is not so much the marketing or the communication. It is, as I indicated, an issue of, shall I say, I don't know, people and trends in terms of movements during that unprecedented time that we're facing with regards to COVID. And that's why I also made the point that we had the resurgence of, I think it was at that point, wave number three in November of the COVID pandemic. With regards to Honorable Modise, maybe I failed to indicate at the beginning that I will just focus on the reds. We registered at an 82% performance rating. So, Honorable, with all due respect, it was not all red. I just happened to focus on the red in the interest of time.
Can I come to rescue before it comes to me?
Yes.
The one that I said focus on the red.
Yes, Chair.
Your performance is known. I don't think Mr. Mutsu said that, but he's raising issues that are contributing to your rent.
Yes, Chair. Noted, Honorable Chair. On the issue of fire protection and fire management in the Kruger National Park, we will submit a formal report. There is quite a few technical questions that you asked the Honorable Chair. Please allow us to report to you formally. And with regards to intelligence with communities and road closures, I know that our law enforcement agencies in the Kruger are very active in the community. They come from those communities. There are times when we do have alert notices early on with regards to a road closure. Usually by the previous evening, there is awareness. And when necessary, we alert tourists and staff as early as possible to avoid certain road closures. But intelligence is probably something that is very difficult to quantify because we cannot not always say that all the time we have 100% intelligence. That said, we also do not have it within our control to manage the actual protest or to mitigate against the protest happening. The best that we can do is to keep communication lines open, keep communicating with our key stakeholders, in this instance, our staff and our tourists, and keeping them safe. Even as we speak this morning, I did receive another notification very early of another road closure, and this has been happening, as you may know, honorable members, for the last week and a half, literally daily road closures and protests. The COO will speak at length about the issue of integrity testing. I think that from my side, that is as much as I will cover, or I also need to note, Honorable Chair, the length claims detailed report that you have requested. So we owe you two detailed reports, Honorable Chair, that is the issue of KNP fires and the land claims progress. Those will be submitted in good time, Honorable Chair. I will now hand over to Dr. Ziba to speak to us about the issue of rhinos. Thank you. Dr. Dr. Ziba, thank you. Are you unmuted, Dr. Ziba? Are you unmuted? We cannot hear you. I don't believe I'm the only one who can hear you. We'll give you...
We can't. Yes, on mute, I would imagine.
Okay.
Maybe through your chair, we could send him a message that he must probably... The only explanation for me logically, if he's unmuted, would then be that his computer's volume is off.
And we get the next person while you are communicating that information so that the other colleague can be the COO. There are matters that will raise simple, straightforward things that you cannot understand, cannot respond to. And these are basic. Are you a member of the Fire Protection Association? These are the things that I expect the COO to respond to as well while dealing with the other matters.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I would like to respond to, I think, Chair, yes, we are, in all of our parks, we are members of variable and a variety of fire protection associations. We are a very big team player in the preventing and the fighting of fires in that area. And we are also up to date with our membership fees where we are supposed to be paying for that. Dr. Ziba will add a little bit on the specific instance that you referred to in Kruger, and also in terms of the follow-up that we need to do in that regard. In terms of the integrity testing, or polygraph testing, to call it by the name, integrity testing have more tools than just polygraph testing. It includes like lifestyle audits, etc., but I will not expand on those. The polygraph testing policy has been reviewed on the ground, and it is currently en route to our board, where it will be considered in November, in the November cycle of our board. The main reason for the delay was about the issue about compulsory implementation across, and then also retrospective compulsory in application where it wasn't part of the conditions of service when the specific individuals were appointed. It is applicable, the new policy is applicable across the organization, and there is still, but there are still main elements of voluntary participation in that we would need to honor as a result of the legal restrictions in terms of labor law in this regard. We are, however, not only relying on the polygraph testing for internal involvement of staff in matters like environmental crime. We do have an information-based system where there is either there is some triggers that would let us look into employees, and that then often result in the in our ability to catch these employees or other perpetrators in the act where they can then be arrested. So there is an element of proactive work in this regard. It's not all reactive, but there is certainly, we rely on that information-based system quite extensively, which we would also share with you in terms of the RINO management strategy that we have in place in terms of the enforcement. Thank you very much, Chair. That's from my side.
Honorable Chair.
Yes, CFO. Over to you.
Thank you. And thank you once again for Honorable Chair for allowing us an opportunity to answer the members' questions. I would like to specifically thank Honorable Bryant and Honorable Modisa for their advice and comments that they've made. We've certainly looked into those matters that they've raised in order for us as an organization to improve. We remain gratitude with the wisdom of the committee, which they provide guidance to us from time to time. We appreciate it. Honorable Singh, thank you for your questions. So, Peace Park Foundation, if I may start from there, they are quite one of our strategic partners that really help us, in particular to the matter of conservation, because they've got the capacity to raise probably even funding more than SANPA can. During the past financial year, we received 20.4 million from them, but they are not the only source of funding that we actually source fundraising money, but we actually have a number of strategic partners. In the last financial year, we have been able to fundraise about 132 million for the entire year because of the fundraising effort within the organization and the strategy that was approved by the board. And out of the entire 132 million, only 20.4 really came through at this park. Then the deficit, we are quite very concerned about the deficit. And what makes us concerned is the fact that it has actually grown from year on year. But we know that mainly the reason for the deficit was the pandemic. I mean, if you look at history of SANPA, this organization was turning over 300 million in 2004. And we have actually moved to 3.2 billion pre-COVID. That shows you how much this organization has grown. And it has actually turned around revenue to the point of about 70 to 80%, which is unlikely that you will find any Schedule 3A public entity have such a performance. So we have sort of become self-sustainable in a way, but it's something that is really not sustainable, and that's why we have this particular conversation. With regard to the question that you asked about infrastructure program, they were not necessarily reduced, but what happened is that they were actually repurposed. Part of, there were many strategies that were actually employed during COVID, and many entities within the DFSE portfolio, they had actually converted some of the infrastructure money in order to fund operations because they had lost a number of their revenue. So in this particular case, then we obtained an approval from the minister to repurpose 235 million in order to fund the operational pressures in that particular 2 years. We have not subsequently asked for that repurpose. So for the current financial year, we're continuing with our infrastructure program, and we're currently on infrastructure program number 6. With regard to the question you asked about what are we doing about the deficit, it's a very difficult question. It's a question that we continuously engage the ministry. It's a question that we continuously engage the department, the treasurer, in terms of finding solutions for some parts. It's very difficult, particularly on cost containment, because you know there's two sides of the coin. One is the revenue, and revenue you can control it to an extent, but if people don't want to come to the park, there's little that you can do because of the impact of the petrol price, the fuel, the rand dollar exchange, and the fact that people have to make decisions to come to the country. But if you look at those two line items which I've presented, which is people cost as well as the operating cost. The first one is account for about 48% of the cost, and the second one account for 47%. So for us an entity to continue implementing cost containment, it will mean two things. One is that on the operating cost, we've already slashed those costs about more than 400 million in the last 2 years. And we're mindful that some of those cost containment may not be sustainable. And that's what we've done. And we believe that we are almost at the point to the extent that we might even risk implementing our strategy in APP. And it's something that we need to reflect as an organization. The second line item is the first one we've just spoken about, which on the financial I've presented is 1.384 billion. That's a substantial amount of money that we spend on people within the organization. Now, for us, and that's a line that we've been trying to avoid to actually touch, because it's a very sensitive discussion.
But if our funding model doesn't change, we might find ourselves in the future having to have that conversation, as much as difficult as it is. So really, we are looking at the cost containment of those two amounts, excluding depreciation because it's an accounting transaction. So really, what becomes, as much as we are actually, EXCON had actually last month discussed cost containment, because that's what we want to reintroduce and bring back to the organization. The risk with that is that if you are affecting your resources that help you to implement your APP, then you are likely to miss your target. And I think that's where we just need to find a balance. And I don't think SANPARK is able to be able to resolve this problem alone. And I think it will require collective action also of the organization, the portfolio committee, as well as the department, including National Treasury. Then we might find a solution which might be sustainable for our conservation sector. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm ready. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Apologies. I have a problem with the audio in my computer, and I've connected via my phone. I wanted to address, Chair, a couple of questions related to Ryan, starting with a question raised by Honorable Bryant. The number of rhino in Kruger is 2,458, and that's combining 2,250 white rhino and 208 black rhino. And the question around whether the population or when the population will be functionally extinct, I think is the question that we think is perhaps at this stage relatively far off. Perhaps to define a population as functionally extinct, basically a species has basically or would have to be reduced to the point where it no longer plays a significant role in ecosystem function, or when a species is no longer or a population is no longer viable, that is the individuals are no longer able to reproduce, or the population of breeding individuals is so small that basically the population is not able to sustain itself. I don't think we can say this about the Kruger population. And also when we look at the populations in the other rhino parks, which collectively started in the range of about 60 or so black rhino and about 100 or so white rhino, and they have grown to basically a point where now, like, collectively we're looking at over 500, over 600, you know, rhino in the other six rhino parks. When we introduce rhino, our assessment suggests that in order to have a viable breeding population, depending on the size of land, one needs about 20 animals. And so at over 2,200, the Kruger population, in our view, is far from being functionally extinct. However, we do acknowledge that there are risks, and in the past we have undertaken studies to look at the impact of the risks that we, the population faces, and those risks basically, include mainly or are mainly risks associated with poaching. And at the peak of poaching around 2012 to 2014, we were basically projecting that by 2035 to 2045, the population would be at risk of being functionally extinct. But looking at the numbers right now and the trends that we're seeing of declining poaching rates, and also of basically a situation where we have now developed strategies that we believe are more responsive to the challenge, we think that that those risks are much less than was the case around 2014. When the studies that was looking at the that was undertaken. With regards to Peace Park funding, the comment that is specifically relevant in this case to the animals that were being translocated in the last financial year. And there was a commitment from Peace Parks Foundation to fund the government of Mozambique to translocate or to fund the cost of capture and translocation of these animals from Kruger National Park to Zinab. And when the pandemic impacted their financial resources, they were not able to basically meet that commitment. What we have said, because the changes, especially with regards to Zinab, have been such that there are factors or issues that are outside of our control. We have requested that we meet with both the Mozambique Conservation Agency, ANAC, as well as Peace Parks Foundation, so that we can be able to discuss their original request and the need for animals and South Africa's commitment to support conservation and restocking of national parks in Mozambique, so that we may be able to find common ground around how do we plan for this before we make this commitment in our annual plan. And this is something that the Auditor General, as well as some of our engagements with them, advised that we need to perhaps engage so that we may avoid a situation where basically we make commitments and factors outside of our own control impact on our performance. With regards to the question around Act, what we want to indicate, Chair, is that all our national parks are compliant with the Act, and all our national parks are members of local fire protection associations. We also want to follow up on, in addition to providing evidence with regards to Kruger specifically, Chair, in this regard, is to basically check the particular case that the community reported, where there was impact on their on community grazing lands, and there was no follow-up, so that we may be able to follow up at the park level and ensure that the relevant managers can be able to at least provide context and the responses to what happened in that particular case. We would want to perhaps publicly apologize for the impact that has had on the community, and want to perhaps understand the details before we can fully respond to that matter. I think, Chair, with regards to the question around the impact of poaching on the rhino population, we Chair, feel that we've been quite upfront in highlighting the fact that poaching is a major driver of the decline in the rhino population in Kruger. All of the other factors, including, for instance, extended droughts, natural death rates, we have basically quantified them to be quite a smaller contribution, even though sometimes they interact to compound the impact of poaching. For example, in the 2015 to 2016 extended drought, what we saw was that all of the populations of animals in Kruger, basically their birth rate declined as animals lost condition. But the rate at which all of the other species recovered was quite far relative to rhino. And part of what we attributed this was the compounding effect of losing female rhinos to poaching combined with the impact of drought on the reproductive rates of rhino. And as a result, the birth rates become suppressed for much longer than would be naturally. And with that, what you then get is a situation where basically if your death rates are persistent, then the population, the rate at which the population recovers is much slower. But Chair, we can state again here that unless we are able to stop poaching in Kruger National Park in particular, it's going to be very difficult for us to see or to stop or to halt the decline in the population. What we are now doing in response to your other question, Chair, about what are we doing to turn this around, is that we've developed a strategy and we've developed a very specific management plan, or rhino management plan for Kruger in response to the conservation strategy, which basically stipulates strategies that we are implementing in order to be able to turn around this situation. And these strategies include the security intervention, but also they include enhanced zoning of the park in order to identify areas that need to be where we need to put a lot of our efforts to basically protect rhinos. And these are areas we call rhino zones. And secondly, Chair, what we see is that in addition to these interventions, we have also looked at opportunities for us to acquire land. And in our revision of the land inclusion plan, we are now including opportunities for buying land that is suitable for expanding opportunities to basically introduce rhino either from parks or from other parks and Kruger into those areas. For instance, if you look at our rhino population in the other parks, it's been growing at about 5% per annum for the last 4 or 5 years. And we know that we are starting to see the slowing of the growth rate in that population, in the population in the other parks, because of the increase in the number of bulls in the population. And so now we're needing to selectively take out bulls from the population, but we need land in order to be able to introduce these in the wild still. And these are factors that impact on our ability to basically continue to grow the population in the other parks while minimizing the impact of poaching in Kruger and creating opportunities for us to enhance the population that we're managing. The last point, Chair, relates to the translocation of animals to Zinav. I request that you submit the list, Chair, of species that were translocated to Zinav, but they include mainly zebra, wildebeest, and other plain game. And this year we have planned to translocate giraffe to Zinav until they basically requested certain permits, which we were not able to meet at the time of request. The agreement is in place, Chair, and we also perhaps could also request that we make any formal recommendation regarding the approval of the translocation available to the portfolio committee in writing, so that we can be able to provide this information accurately. We everything has been done, I can assure members, according to book. Approvals were sought, and the necessary permits were sought for the translocation. The last point, Chair, which you raised was the issue of the rhinos that were translocated to Chad. We translocated, I think in 2019, about six black rhino to Chad. Unfortunately, those animals were, four of those six animals died, and basically when we did an investigation, the investigation showed that the animals died due to largely malnutrition. The malnutrition was not quite evident, but it would seem like it was malnutrition of specific micronutrients, specifically nutrients such as selenium, which were apparently deficient in the soils. So although the vegetation looked good and the animals looked well, but their uptake of certain nutrients in their vegetation was relatively low, and so progressively they began to suffer consequences of this. For instance, we had a video and photo footage of animals that were eating, of black rhino, which are browsers, eating grass, which is usually a behavior that you see in animals when they have a particular nutrient deficiency. And the stomach contents of the animals also showed that they were not feeding strictly on grass as they should. And this was something that has impacted, or that impacted the success of that project. The government of Chad, together with partners, have approached SANPAC about, further animals to perhaps now put back, now that they have learned over the last 3 years or so, how to care for the two remaining females. Two remaining males. I need to double check that. That they want to now introduce some breeding, animals, so that they have a breeding population. We basically said that we want to engage with specialists and engage in these discussions cautiously, given the experience that we had previously. And we also recommended that they consider also other options, including buying from the private sector as a way of restarting a viable breeding population. So, Chair, it's still too early to report on the future with regards to that specific population. But it was an amazing project to be involved in. But unfortunately, it suffered major setbacks because of inexperience on the ground, particularly with regards to some of the issues that were identified as major drivers and causes of the deaths of the four animals. Thank you very much, Chair. I will end there.
Is there any other senior executive that we've omitted before the Chair comes before?
Honourable Chairperson, I think we have covered, according to my record here, that we've covered all of the questions, Chair. And I'm comfortable to hand over to the Chairperson of the Board. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Thank you, Chair. I was worried to just speak in case you were going to say that I have not recognized you. thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. It's always a good opportunity for us to come to Parliament, because not only can we report on the things that we are doing, we also account on some of the things that that we are meant to be doing, and in some instances not doing well. The other thing that is useful for us, Chair, and I speak on behalf of the board and management in this regard, is that the fact that yourselves as committee members and as parliamentarians are able to get, in some instances, to communities and get people to come and speak to you, it also helps us to improve the way we work. And we really, really welcome those kinds of initiatives, those kinds of suggestions and improvements to our work. And we can do better, and of course, in many fronts, but I think that and we also have, as an organization, as it was indicated, have also tried our level best in terms of ensuring performance, as it was indicated by the acting CEO. With regard to just getting awareness and also the rest of South Africa getting involved, we have indicated previously, Chair, we started that process now, and you're going to be hearing about it a little bit more, and that is what we call as a board to look at Vision 2040. What are we trying to do with Vision 2040? We are trying to get the rest of South Africa and maybe abroad to also see that this is our vision for South African national parks and our work around conservation. We are regarded in many parts of the world and the continent specifically as one of the leading conservation agencies in the, on the continent. Some of our scientists, like Dr. Zuba here, who is also has just been also been elected recently, re-elected rather, to be part of to be co-chair of the multidisciplinary expert panel on the intergovernmental platform on biodiversity and ecosystem services. And this is an accolade not just to Dr. Zuba personally, but to the organization. And I think what it shows us as an organization is that we do have men and women who are in the leadership of the organization, especially led by this management team as a collective, that are regarded in high regard in the sector, not only in South Africa but globally. Of course, that's not a reason for us to be complacent. It's for us to improve. And hence, Honorable Chair, when you raise this issue about bursaries and schools and all of that, I think we do have some initiatives. It's one of the areas that I think I would like to say thanks to you for raising it, because I think it then gives us an opportunity to start improving in that. So thank you, thank you for those. And the same thing with regards to land claims. I think this committee has raised this matter ad nauseum with SANPAS. Our response as a board, Chair, these are not responses to say that we have done everything perfectly and there is no room for improvement. But we just want to note progress that we are hearing the committee. We are starting to work on these things. We have established a committee, a special board committee that we didn't have before, that is chaired by Chief Matsila, who is in attendance today, and they've been working very hard on trying to get as many communities' issues addressed, especially with regard to land claims around the Kruger to start with. But our view is that this model and these conversations and approach needs to be extended to other parts. Again, Chair, we are beginning to put these things in place and we are committed to see progress. And we would be submitting the written report in terms of what that progress is so far. And again, Chair, the committee can continue to tell us improve on this. We are not happy with that. We don't take that personally. We take it as part of your role, and we look forward to do that. And also, the CFO spoke about the financial issues. We also have the financial sustainability plan that we've adopted, and the minister signed off on it and submitted to her. Again, we see that as work in progress. There is issues that are subjective and issues that are objective. And the objective factors include the performance of the sector, which is the tourism sector in its entirety, and the impact of COVID. Again, notwithstanding that, we've seen an increase in numbers, in visitor numbers, and you will see this Chairperson, in our audited reports with regard to performance information of people coming into our parks. We have also seen an increase in terms of domestic, and I think this is an important issue, because we feel very strongly as an organization that the more South Africans that go out there and enjoy the parks as part of their heritage, the more we should do our level best as an organization to make sure that we continue to maintain our keep as an organization, but also that we, as an entity of government, that we represent government interests in this regard. So all of this, Chairperson, are work in progress. With regards to, lastly, Chair, the issue of the CEO, or the former CEO, because that process has now come to an end. on our side in terms of, the committee had, at every time that we came to the portfolio committee, this issue was of concern. We got parliamentary questions, we asked questions on how, when are you finishing this matter, and we kept on saying to the committee, this matter is, we are following a disciplinary process. I want to say, Chairperson, we are governed by the law. And I think on behalf of the organization and the board, we want as much as possible to stay within the law. And what does that mean in this context? You follow a disciplinary process, you come to the outcome of that disciplinary process, you allow as fair a process as possible, and then you come to an outcome. And then when that is done, you then take, which is what we've done, and say, okay, this has been going on and there's been acting, and this has been an issue that the committee and ourselves, because I think we also primarily were concerned about the time it took to resolve this issue. Now that issue in terms of the disciplinary process is behind us, then we could take the next step. In law, Chairperson, there is nothing stopping us in law from advertising the position. And on our side, we do not want to wait, because remember, process of appeal, and they take long. But we do not want on our side to just sit and wait until all of that is finished before we could start the process. Of course, there's legalities around this, and I wouldn't want to go into that, Chairperson, with your support and understanding. But I can safely say that we, as a board, we have done everything within the law, and we continue to do so. And finally, Chair, I would like to say once again, thank the committee. But also thank you to my fellow board members for the support that and the fact that all of us, not all of us, the committee chairs were in attendance today, as well as management for holding the fort and behaving and doing work as professionals to make sure that the organization still performs at the level that it does, and also come here with and report on those things, and we are going to go back and also look at areas of improvement, and this has been a useful experience for us, and I would like to say thank you very much, Chair, and to committee members.
Which committee chairs are here in the meeting, Chairperson?
Mr. Masia, who chairs the tourism, should I show their faces, Chair?
Yeah, that we do. We've never met some of them.
There's, Ms. Zooks Dramasia chairs the tourism subcommittee of the board. Ms. Friedman, Yolan.
Hi, Chair. I think we met before. Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. She's here.
She has represented you several times.
I know. And then
yeah.
I indicated earlier on Ms. Mayatun Pakova was here at the beginning of the meeting, and then she had to attend to an emergency. She looked after the HC, the human capital issues in the organization. And then now, of a recent, we've added Chief Masila, as I've indicated. Chief Masila? There he is. All right. So these are what we call these colleagues, Chairperson, as what we call Checo. We are a committee of chairs that is responsible for managing the work of the board. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before I allow for your questions, we are waiting for the end. Did you feel that issue of schools, Chairperson of Sandpark, I tell you something, for you to see what other entities of government are doing in dealing with the issue of youth unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And then you saw my remark was that it's only the FSE entities who can do that. What FSE indicated earlier when we were dealing with funding, we directed you to do those things because we realized you were not doing the issue of gathering exposed the tourist children to opportunities that exist in all the entities, including the children. The colleagues who will agree with me throughout, we've been holding public hearings in the province. And then the young people who are graduates, some are nature conservation graduates, some are environmental law graduates, environmental management sciences graduates. They are raising this issue with us sharply, the issue of unemployment. And then I'm raising this because this issue on the presidential youth employment seminar program. I don't think when the president announced it in line with what I said earlier in our biodiversity economy, he was saying to you as entities, take this poor kid, take them for 1 year, you drop them. It was about creating minimum employment because none of the entities have ever said, say, yes, we took this kid through this program, I was able to stretch, they're going to accept one. That the CFO talked to you about the bakery in the Kruger National Park. That was, I've seen it, it's working. But the majority of them, we take them, put them in the system for a year, then we drop them. And then also now the study. So that's why I'm saying, Chairperson and CEO, to you, Flora, in particular, one wants to get the consolidated report on this matter, on the progress on the presidential youth employment stimulus program across the board. And that is to deal with that issue of the progress in implementing our resolution that we said. We need to know if impacts have done that. We need that and get an evidence to say, indeed, they went to this course, and this is how they've done, apart from school kids visiting the park. You have done that to expose these rural children to the opportunities available and the bursaries to fight them. That's the other issue that I'd like you to present that also with the entities in writing plan. The other issues around the issue of sustainability that I've raised also with Sandy. You are on record, and I'm repeating again that you committed to working with these entities for them to be financially sustainable on their own. Then you hear Dr. Biba, what Honorable Brian has said again. And then we want to say that then I think a progress report is that effect you need to also share with us as well. I should think on my side that the issue that I wonder with myself, the similar question will ask you when it comes to Sandy, you have to respond that to us in writing. In relation to this entity, that includes your other entities, Sandy and Water Services. Sorry, it's Mangali and the Water Services as well. You'll have to deal with those issues. Then I will ask colleagues if there's still any other follow-up questions so that we move towards the Google meeting. It seems to be quiet. Yes. Going, gone. Chairperson of Kanpa. Oh, Ms. Honorable Mdiso, you are in the back.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much as I'm getting ready for the plenary. It is my conviction that what I heard here is that SANPA is in compliance with the National Health and Fire Act, and they are also a member of the, and their membership is paid up for the FPAs. I'm sure this would not take long. I'm sure by the time we finish in plenary, we should be having this in our email, because it has been a good story to tell, because these are some of the issues that arose in other provinces where we have been. So if we can just be furnished with a copy of the membership of SANPAC,
on the FTA that they are in part with, and then the compliance with the National Health and Fire Act. Thank you very much.
And the details, Dr. Biba, Matiani community is just at the gate of the Bunda Marielle. They are there. They are the boundary, lies the boundary there, if you know where Bunda Maria is. Yeah, just get that information as well and how and they responded to the fire and everything around there. You can give us that progress report. Your colleagues in Cruden, particularly the management of Bunda Maria, should be able to share that information with you. Honorable Brian?
Thanks, Chairperson, and thank you for the responses, and thank you to Dr. Ziba for confirming those rhino numbers. Indeed, very frightening to see those numbers continue to drop, and we literally are looking at a situation now where in a few years' time we might have none left. Very, very sad. Chair, just very quickly, who is taking responsibility from Sandparks in order to address the issues with the closed-off access roads? I know primary responsibility does fall with police, but who from Sandparks, the CEO, the COO, and is it possible perhaps to get a commitment from the Deputy Minister? I think the Deputy Minister is still on the meeting, is she? That she can take this up with the Minister of Police. It is an incredibly urgent issue, not only for tourism and the sustainability of Kruger, but also the impact on biodiversity in that area, also seeing trees getting chopped down. So I just want to find out who's going to take responsibility from the officials and whether or not the Deputy Minister would be able to take this up with her counterparts in police. Thanks.
The Deputy Minister apologized to the other minister there in the cabinet, okay? But then I was told the DG Flora, including the DG, she's leading the DSFE delegation. She will be able to respond to the other issue. The others, we can hand over to you some thoughts.
The responsibility to continue with the negotiations and discussions around road closures will fall in my office. I will be supported by the chairperson of our board and perhaps as well other board members. But yes, indeed, we do need a lot of support, political support in that instance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just respond to indicate that on the rhino matter, we have come to a stage where we have taken stock of all the initiatives that are taking place related to rhinos. But also to indicate further on specific matters relating to law enforcement. Our colleagues within the Regulatory Control and Sector Monitoring Branch, they run the Fusion Center, as you may be aware, which is where all the rhino-related illegal activities are recorded and followed up on. And it has recorded some successes over the last few years. In respect of the rate at which arrests and convictions have been made in respect of those that are responsible for poaching, especially within the Kruger National Park area. You would have seen that the numbers released sometime in the middle of this year, that there was a decline from Kruger National Park. However, we saw an increase in poaching activities in KZN, which is very unfortunate. We are working with FMVELO around strengthening
their operational capabilities and responses, management responses, also related to matters on rhino and other animals of concern within the province also. I will forward and engage the Deputy Minister in respect of engaging her counterparts further in respect of enforcement-related matters and strengthening existing activities that you are undertaking in respect of enforcement also. Thank you, Chair.
I think this can bring us to the end of our meeting. I suspect it's a legacy. Chairperson, Hassan Pat, board members that are still in our meet, I see Masia, Ms. Friedman, who is still here, yeah. And the senior executive of Salpat colleagues. Let me take this opportunity to thank you for availing yourself. Let's continue to achieve my I want to say something. I think I'm going to say thank you, Jeff.
No, I wanted to say really Uamakazi. That's all.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chief Matthew. Yeah, let's continue to service our people. Eh? Whatever we've been doing here, if we put our people first, we've got a long way to go. Yeah, then let's honor the commitments that the President has given to the country. We are the implementing agency to make sure that whatever our people are doing, they have to be delivered. And these entities are very critical to me because they are the delivery arm of government. Like I've indicated, Chairperson of Santa, if entities of other portfolio are able to reach out and fight youth unemployment, and then DDG Flora, you have a lot of money and spend on environmental programs. Yet you've got so many graduates, unemployed graduates. Shiva Masela, you like just for that, you know it very well. Then, really, I mean, what are we trying to say to our people? I hope you understand it along that context that is our concern as members of parliament, and we want you to account for your actions. Thank you so much, Chef Pepin. We'll continue to engage. You can enjoy the rest of your day. Colleagues, just prepare to go to the house. The meeting get adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members.